I'm Ian Kenny from Nebraska.
We also have on my left the secretary of the committee, Mr. Gershwin Dixon, and the lady sitting over there is the researcher of the committee, Ms. Patricia Whitten. You can continue.
So thank you, Chair. Firstly, just to introduce myself, my name is Simon Gianni. I'm the acting director general of the department, and I'm also accompanied by a team here from the department to do the presentation. Immediately on my right hand side, we have Johan Jonsson, who's our budget officer in the department. Just right at my back, we have the chief financial officer, Sandra Gorm, also accompanied by a colleague. At the back, we have Ralmero. So I think this is part of the lesson, so we're going to be faulting in the way. And then at the back, we have the head of the Justice College, Julian Marsh. Also sitting next to him is Memasi Josingwe, the chief director responsible for court performance, but currently also acting as the DDG for court services. We will also be joined later on by the head of the legislative branch in the department, Advocate Dion Radman, and some of the colleagues. I'll introduce them as they enter into the House here, Chair. Chair, thank you very much for the invitation for the department to come and table its annual report. I will do the presentation, and I think during the question time, I'll also request the colleagues to assist. But in doing this presentation, I'll only refer to the issues pertaining to the strategy of the department and how we've been able to deliver according to that strategy. We also have prepared a financial report on our audit, and I'm not too sure whether this has been circulated, because this is part one of the documents that was circulated yesterday. So that will be presented by the Office of the Chief Financial Officer. Chair, I think this is the first issue that I would like to present here, I guess, in terms of the this annual report. Firstly, just to start from the beginning by reflecting on the strategy of the department. Our strategy, I think in terms of our own vision, is access and the transformation of the justice services and the promotion of the constitutional values. Our mission statement, together we provide accessible, fair, speedy, cost-effective and quality justice for all. And of course, this strategy is underpinned by three strategic goals, as I've indicated. One is access to justice. The second is the transformation of the state as well as the society. And the third is the transformation of the department in terms of its services, how it delivers them. But firstly, I think it's also important just to reflect on the core functions of the department. As I've indicated, in terms of our access to justice, we have indicated in terms of our strategy what this means. It's just the provision of facilities. Other than that as well, also to look in terms of how our services have been transformed to make sure that they are sort of accessible to all the service providers. We also ensure effective and efficient management of the department, and that relates to the most function that we perform in the administration. We also, I think, in terms of our major role as far as the performance of the court, we play the role of facilitating the resolution of criminal and civil disputes. Yes, we do know that in terms of our constitution, that this function is great in terms of Section 165. Plays in the domain within the court. So the role of the department is just to facilitate that process by giving the necessary support to the judiciary in carrying out these functions. We also provide the capital infrastructure for the courts in terms of the facilities. We also protect and promote the rights of the vulnerable groups through a chief directorate that is specifically been created in the department to deal with the issues that relates to vulnerable groups. Our responsibility also relates to the development of legislation That also includes the rules of courts. We also responsible for the second branch in the department, that is the development and the promotion of the constitution, which is the big section that the department is also responsible for. But I think the main is just to look at our role in terms of providing education and the awareness around the issues of constitution to the public, and that's the role that the chief directorate plays. We also do play a role in terms of the supervision of the administration of the disease and insolvent estates, and that's the role that is played by the masters of the High Court. Last but not least, we provide the legal services and protect all organs of state, and this are part of the functions that are played by the chief state law advisor as well as the office of the chief litigation officer, which is responsible for the administration of the state attorney's offices. So I'll firstly start with the first pillar of our strategy, which is access to justice. Part of the promises that we have made in this was deliberately to ensure that the department responds to the needs of the community, more particularly the previously disadvantaged. We all know that the history that we come from is that not much services were provided to people that are staying in rural areas as well as the previously disadvantaged areas. People had to travel long distances to access justice services. So part of our strategy in here is to bring those services closer to people, especially the previously disadvantaged. And so our priority in here is to focus on those areas that require this kind of services. And so I'll just reflect on the kind of work that we have done for this ensuing year, that is 2008/9. In there, we have promised that we will try and make sure that we bring the court services closer to the previously disadvantaged areas. And I think in the main here, these are rural areas as well as the townships. And so we've been able to finalize some of the courts. I think those that we'll mention here for purposes of this are the Davidland Court as well as the Polokwane High Court. As we do know that Polokwane as well as Limpopo, those are areas that currently do not have high courts. And part of our strategy was to also ensure that we do at some point in time also provide those kind of services. So for this year, we've been able to provide what we call a circuit court for the High Court in Polokwane, which will then be able to service the people in Polokwane so that they don't have to travel up to Pretoria for services with regard to the High Courts. Okay. But also among this chair, I think the Minister did announce sometime last year in our, after the State of the Nation address, that part of the issues that the department was seized with was to transform the existing courts or also add additional ones in areas that I think previously we do know that most of the courts in the townships were not fully fledged courts. These are the courts that were in the main supported by the courts in town. For example, if you look around the Johannesburg area, you have a main court which is situated in the town of Johannesburg, and you have smaller courts that are supporting those that are in the townships like Orlando and others. So one of the decisions that the department took was to transform and make sure that those courts in the township also receive full recognition in terms of the services that have been provided. So what the minister then promised was that we'll move, I think, on an incremental basis, given the fact that, this requires sufficient resources, which we didn't have at the time. So we then identified about 15 courts that we're going to transform into fully-fledged courts so that those people can get the full package of services. So we have, I think, in the year under review, been able to establish those courts, and they are mentioned in various provinces. We have a court in Motherwell. We have Davidson that I've just mentioned, Alexander that is in Johannesburg at Trechville, Tembesa in Gauteng, Madaden in KZN, and then Tiana in Limpopo, Ekangala, which is in Mpumalanga. But currently, I think that court will then be transferred to Gauteng as that area has now been amalgamated with the Gauteng province. We have Jan Kemdorp as well as Robert Rock in the Northern Cape, Kakamas, Kemus, Pof Adder, and Gatu in the Northern Cape. And with regard to the Western Cape, we have Kailich as well as Atlantis. Now, these courts, I think that the statement mentioned there that they were about to be proclaimed, they've already been proclaimed around September. And as we speak to you now, those courts have made sure that they deliver all the package of services, and we've also rearranged the infrastructure to ensure that they are fully capacitated to deal with the kind of mandate that they've been given. So, Chair, then just moving forward, apart from this, we also undertook that in smaller areas where we won't be able to establish fully fledged services, what we need to do in order to ensure that people don't have to travel long distances, a decision that we took was to create what we call mobile courts. These courts are in mostly in more rural areas, areas that are not densely populated. So we've been able to provide, I think, under the in this year that we're talking about 40 of those mobile courts in those kind of areas. But apart from that, Chair, as well, we had undertaken that in areas that we don't have fully-fledged services, we need to provide some kind of better infrastructure, and more particularly in areas that are in townships. We have, I think, as we're speaking at the moment, identified sites in the number of big centers like Mamelodi, Duzuma, which is in Durban, and so it, as I'm mentioning, there we have also identified sites and which are, as we speak at the moment, some of them are in different stages of, you know, of development. Chair, then the second strategy relates to that we have to ensure an effective and efficient management of resources, and this in the main, I think, includes human resources. In here, I think the issue that the department faced then was the high vacancy rate, which also impacted quite negatively in terms of the rendering of services in the department. At the time when we presented this, I think the figure that we had at the time was about 15%, and we then made an undertaking that we would reduce this figure, you know, as the resources permit. So I must indicate that I think from that particular year, we've been able to reduce that, you know, from 15% to the 14.5%. That relates to the vacancy rate of you know of post in the department, but also we've been able to ensure that we ensure the growth of the department, because we do know that part of the challenges that the department faced was the lack of appropriate staff, mostly in areas that require the services that are densely populated. So we've been able to increase our size, more particularly in the sub offices where these services are being required. And so if you look at that growth, it's 6.5, which, in, you know, if one looks at the figures at the time when we made that statement, we were at 5,490, and we've been able to increase this up to 8,190 for that ensuing year. But also what goes together with this, Chair, relates to the improvement in the manner in which the department functions, because we do know that part of the problem in the past is that the department has been too centralized and there was not much delegation given to offices, more particularly where these kind of services are being required. So we've been able through the HR processes to establish a framework in terms of which, you know, service delivery in the courts is improved or in the sub-offices by ensuring that firstly we have the adequate staff that are fully trained, but also to ensure that they have the necessary delegations to carry out those functions. So our human resource plan addresses some of those bottlenecks and the kind of challenges that we have in terms of the processes, as I've indicated. Chair, I think the other issue was related to the department also was faced with this problem because of the lack of adequate infrastructure in terms of human resources. We had to rely quite heavily on temporary workers, that is contract workers. And our challenge was to create more permanent, you know, posts and reduce reliance on temporary workers. And so we've been able under that year to reduce the number from, you know, to increase it, I think, from 6.7 to 7.5% by appointing more permanent staff as the number was before. The other issue, Chair, related also in the manner in which the department dealt with you know, the disciplinary matters. We had a very huge backlog of, you know, disciplinary matters, and this impacted very negatively in terms of the performance of the department, and we had then had to take steps to reduce this number. If we look at the numbers, you know, I think the numbers that we had was around 298, and out of the 298, we have been able to finalize 178 of the disciplinary matters. I think this is a very huge improvement if one relates to the issues that and the problem that we have had in the department in the past. Chair, as well, the other issue relates to our financial management in the department. This has been a challenge which also impacts very negatively on service delivery. We do know that given the magnitude of the offices and the size of the offices that the department is responsible for, and also given the fact that historically these courts were not, some of them were in the former homelands and they were not fully capacitated, financial administration has been one of the problems that was not able to ensure that those courts are able to perform, and hence our audit report that was not quite pleasing. We've been able to introduce some kind of changes in terms of our financial management to try and improve on that. And so we will then make some kind of presentation on that, and I'll request the CFO just to indicate in terms of how we've improved our financial situation, just with a way of improving the negative report by the Auditor General on this kind of issue. So we'll deal with that report, I think, as the last one. Chair, part of our efforts of improving the function of the department was also to embark on the modernization program, because the department had been utilizing very archaic systems in the past, and we had to make sure that we transform our court by introducing modern technology in the courts. So our IT system, I think, has been able to really assist us in that regard. And part of the program that we undertook in that particular year was to introduce what we call digital recording system in the courts to enable our courts, firstly, to have an integrated and a much reliable system that would ensure that what happens in the court is properly recorded and that we minimize the loss of documents. And that system, the court digital recording system, tries to ensure that the court is able to function more adequately by ensuring that their systems are modernized as well. Chair, parallel to that particular program as well was also to introduce a case management system that is electronically based, that would enable our judicial officers and the prosecutors at the touch of a button to be able to manage their cases. This is a system that was introduced, I think in that year we called it an e-scheduler, which enables the courts to enroll their cases by using electronic devices. And this system has been put in all the courts, and it's now fully functional. But of course, we still have to go to the second phase of doing an evaluation before the system is now rolled out for the second phase in terms of its application. Chair, the other issue also relating to the administration of justice, which impacted negatively on the case backlog, was the way in which our courts dealt with very voluminous cases that were also of a high risk. We do know that I think in the past, we used to have some problems about the escapes in our jails, in our cells and courts, because our cells were not properly adequately structured to deal with very high risk offenders and so on. So we had a tendency where people would, because of the great numbers of prisoners that have to flock out the courts were not able to deal with those cases quite sufficiently, and as a result, some people would take advantage and escape. So we then developed a system which we call a video arraignment, which enables our courts to postpone these matters without the accused having to travel to court. And this has helped really also to reduce the cost on the part of the departments of police as well as the corrections in terms of the management of prisoners. We have introduced this pilot, I think, in KZN. We have now rolled it out to a number of sites, and currently, as we speak, we are running at 45 courts and 21 Department of Correction Services facilities that have also have this kind of access. So the idea, I think, in the long term is to enable our courts by using electronic system of managing cases without people having to travel long distances. I think this will help us in the great time to reduce the cost of running cases in courts, where people we don't have to transport witnesses abroad and elsewhere. People could be able to click to a system that they can be able to testify you know, via electronic or an IT system that is available. Chair, the other issue that relates to this particular pillar as well relates to the way in which our courts, and we do also acknowledge the fact that this still remains a challenge, that we have very huge cases that are not finalized at courts. And part of the problem has been the efficient utilization of the existing resources. Now, as part of the solution to this, we introduced the program which is called a case flow management that enables our judicial officers to take the lead in the management of cases, but also to ensure that the discipline within the court remains the role and you know, the role and the responsibility of the judicial officer who is presiding in those matters. So the introduction of case flow management, even though I think it was from its infancy stage last year, but it has also tried to ensure that there is some kind of level of integrity around how cases are being managed at court level. We have introduced that system in all of the district courts with a way of ensuring that we are able to deal with the kind of backlog that we have. But, Chair, I also do want to reflect on the fact that we did also acknowledge the fact that, you know, the criminal justice system still also has some kind of challenges, and that's why the criminal justice review was established to ensure that we improve the coordination amongst all the role players. Because if we look at the figure that I gave you there on the second bullet, it just indicates out of the 1 million cases that were enrolled for that year, we had almost 60% of those cases that were withdrawn for various reasons. Some of them is because of lack of sufficient evidence. Some of them were withdrawn, you know, because of you know, the case wasn't ready to go to court at that time. And so this is but one of the challenges that I think the Criminal Justice Review is dealing with at the moment, which I think I'm hopefully that I think in this, you know, the in this year we'll be able to record some kind of progress in that regard. Then the other issue is around the withdrawal of cases, which was a problem, as I've indicated to you, that if we look at that figure, you know, 60% out of the cases that are coming to court, and if that number is withdrawn, it just indicates really the inefficiency within the system. So this year we introduced a number of measures to ensure that we improve that coordination, and we've enabled then, I think, with those measures to record a 6.2% decrease in the number of withdrawn cases. Now, we have a total number of 50 regional courts that are dedicated for the sexual offences. We do know that, I think, as part of the effort of government of ensuring that we give sufficient and adequate protection to women and children, and these courts were established precisely to ensure that, you know, the way the courts deal with issues that, you know, relate to the vulnerable groups, that we are also responsive to their needs, and this court, I think they have been able to prove that point, because I think if one looks at their performances, that you know, this court has been able to increase the conviction rate, but also in terms of the finalization of cases, we've been able to record some kind of progress in this regard. So our conviction rate is 66.7%. Of which 444 cases were finalized through alternative distributed judgment. These are cases that we divert from the system that would not require, you know, to be dealt with. More particularly, these are cases that, you know, involve children, where we identify that in order to deal with that problem, you don't have to subject children through the entire criminal justice system, but by providing them with other alternative methods of resolving those disputes. Then the other project that we introduced as part of dealing with this huge, you know, productivity problem in the courts was the case backlog, you know, project. I'll report on this, I think subsequently after this, you know, slide, just to indicate that I think our regional courts have now been able, in fact the target was the regional courts, even though we do understand that the case backlog does not only relate to regional courts, but also with regard to the other district courts. But we targeted regional courts because precisely regional courts were the worst kind of, you know, courts that had such a very huge backlog of cases. And also, you know, these are cases that were more serious, and so we had to focus on them. And so I'll just indicate exactly the kind of numbers that we've been able to reduce. The the outstanding cases. But of course, we didn't really only stop with regard to the regional courts. We also assisted the high courts, because part of the problem in the high courts was the case backlog, or the piling up of cases that require appeals or that have to be finalized in terms of reviews and appeals, and some, you know, related to civil matters. We had a project that we were running in the former TBD, which is now called the North Gauteng High Court, where we, through the assistance of advocates, we've been able to reduce significantly the number of outstanding reviews and appeals to a level that was more significant and acceptable to the department. Now, Chair, I think in relation to the lower courts and the high courts, we also on page, on the slide number 9, also give you the various performance of the various courts. For the conviction rate, I think in terms of the high courts, you know, we have about 88%. And for the regional courts, for the year ensuing, we had about 73.7%. Sorry, the 88.1% share was for the district court. I just made a mistake. And the regional court, 73.7%, and the high courts were 86.3%. The constitutional court, out of the number of cases, which is 391 that were received for that particular year, they were only able to finalize about 69%, which is about 17%, of which 5 cases had judgments handed down and 64 dismissed. There are, however, 96 cases that were awaiting the direction by the court. So, Chair, I just need to indicate here, because I think this, you know, may give you a slightly skewed picture to indicate that, you know, this court is not performing. The procedure followed in the constitutional court is slightly a different one than if one were to equate it with the rest of the other courts. Cases take a bit longer there to be processed because of a number of processes that have to be undertaken. So if you were to measure them according to the numbers that are flowing in, say, compare exactly how many of those cases that you know, are being finalized per year, you won't get that correct picture like if it's in the district court, because it takes a bit longer to finalize the matter in the constitutional court as opposed to an ordinary court. We also gave you a record of how the high courts were performing for that particular year. We had about 31,712 civil trials, and we had about 13,322 criminal trials enrolled for that particular year. Now, of the civil cases enrolled, that is the number, that is 25,339 of these cases are still pending, with 6,373 that have been finalized. And of course, we also do acknowledge that that percentage, if you compare to the inflow of cases, it's also slightly quite below. And I think it's still but one of the areas that I think in terms of the high courts, we still have some challenges in terms of performance. But I must indicate as well that out of that number, we had about 2,532 cases that were withdrawn from the high court, from the system. Now, out of 13,322 criminal cases enrolled, 10,439, which is about 78.3%, has registered outstanding trials. And out of that, we had about 2,883, that is 21.6% cases that were finalized. And 1,563, which is 11.7%, that were postponed. There were 176, which is 1.32% cases that are struck off the roll. Chair, as I've indicated to you, then we have this also, this project of the Criminal Justice Review, which seeks to address the bottlenecks and the loopholes that we have in the system. This project was established around the year 2008, I mean, after being approved by Cabinet, I think, in the past year, that was 2007. We took a bit longer to start with implementation because we had to do a lot of investigation just to see exactly what needs to be done, you know, to improve the functioning of the system. So I would also indicate that I think as part of the Criminal Justice Review, there were some recommendations that we also made in terms of improving the efficiency, how the court should function. I think we had a plan which we called it a 7-point plan, which identifies exactly what needs to be done. Part of it was also to improve our investigating capacity, but also to ensure that we also create some kind of infrastructure in terms of how the police, together with the prosecutors and the rest of the other role players are involved in the criminal justice, you know, function in a much coordinated way than what currently is at the moment. But also we adopted some kind of proposal in terms of improving legislation that would enable the courts to deal with issues of bail and the functioning of the courts in a much better way. And so the number of legislations that was, I think, adopted, and some of them are still, I think, in the drafting stage, as we speak at the moment, to try and improve the functioning of the courts. We also established, I think, under the chairmanship of the former Deputy Minister of Justice, a team that was responsible to ensure that there is much coordination in terms of the funding in relation to the criminal justice system, so that because previously the system has been that, you know, as departments we go individually to Treasury to request funding. And the temptation has been that at some point in time you find that more departments are more resourced than the others, and which then puts this responsibility in terms of implementation that some departments won't be able to discharge some of their responsibility because of the lack of capacity. So a budget review team was then established just to ensure that there's a coordinated way in the manner in which we request you know, some funding from the Treasury. Okay. With regard to this criminal justice review, there is a team which we call you know, the Secretariat of the Criminal Justice Review System that has been established, which is managed by the department, and the minister is then the champion of the entire project as we speak at the moment, and this project reports directly to him through the cluster in terms of its operations. Chair, the case backlog that I wanted to come back to, I think this project was started in November 2006, and I think from that date up to March 2009, we've been able to finalize about 13,113 cases, and this comprised of 8,855 cases that were finalized and 3,649 that were withdrawn after a screening process. Because through the system, we also established a mechanism of ensuring that all cases that are enrolled are properly screened. Because in the past, we used to have cases that were just in the system, but they were not even ready for trial. So the screening process that was introduced was just to try and improve in the manner in which these cases are sort of, you know, also enrolled in the court. So as we speak at the moment, that is the figure up to April 2009, we had about 9,229 cases that were finalized. Now, on the regional court role, there was a 22% or 23% reduction from the initial number of the you know, cases that were on the system, that is 20,000 since this project was established. It's still continuing, Chair, and as I've indicated to you, that the challenge is also to ensure that this project is also directed at the other district courts. We are in the process of ensuring that we identify those bottlenecks, because these problems, they are not only relating to the regional courts, they also relate to the district courts. So we are still targeting the regional courts as well as the high courts as well to ensure that they can be fully funded and fully covered under this project. The Treasury has advanced specific you know, money for this project, and we're very helpful. I mean, we're very grateful about that you know, endeavor, because it would enable us to ensure that we can clear up all of those cases that we're claiming, because we still have a number of people that are in prison that have, you know, because of the lack of coordination and the lack of appropriate attention by our courts, those people, some of them are still languishing in jail. So part of this project is to identify those old cases, ensuring that they are brought back, you know, into the system. If I were to maybe explain the criteria that we utilize to identify these cases, for the regional courts, we use a criteria of about 9 months. In other words, if a case has been lying in the system for 9 months, we identify it to be qualifying to be under this, you know, project. For the district court, we look at cases that are about 6 months old in the system. We then identify them, you know, and deal them through that system. As I've indicated to you, Chair, this is but one of our success stories that I think through the funding that Treasury has given us, we'll be able to ensure that, you know, this problem of people that are languishing in jail for longer periods, and that also contributes towards overcrowding in prison, is addressed to some degree in relation to this.
So as I've indicated, we also have within the department, as part of the Service Delivery Improvement, a chief director that is responsible for the protection and the promotion of the rights of the vulnerable groups. And part of this, firstly, was just to ensure that we have the appropriate policies that would enable, you know, the government to deal with these issues that relate to vulnerable groups, and ultimately that will result in our request for legislation. We do know that Parliament has played a pivotal role to help, you know, deal with this particular problem. As far as the matters dealing with children that are waiting trials, we have also have set up some processes in courts that would enable that we fast track, we firstly identify those cases and make sure that they are being prioritized, that they don't have to remain within the system, you know, for a long time. So we have some protocols that have been developed to ensure that those cases are managed in a much integrated way. And so we call those as Interim National Protocol on Management of Children Awaiting Trial. We do also acknowledge that I think after the criminal law, that is the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act was passed in 2007, we had to develop a national framework that indicates in the manner in which we will deal with issues relating to sexual offences. And I must say that we are at the stage where we want to finalize this national draft policy framework. In terms of the legislation, the Director General of the Department of Justice is a coordinator of the task team of the DGs to ensure that all of the DGs that are impacted by this legislation, that their services are also translated and transformed in the manner in which we ensure that there is more protection to people that are vulnerable in the system, but also to ensure that those matters are dealt in a much integrated way than in silos and so on. So, Chair, as well, I think in terms of the NPA, we have a draft framework on the alignment of progress and processes between the Department of Justice, just to ensure that these matters, the way the prosecutors deal with them, as I've indicated to you in terms of the sexual offences, that it is an integrated way, and that is dealt with through the processes that is established. We have a project that we have established, Chair, and which is not as yet been completed, which is called a restorative justice program. That program seeks to ensure that the way we deal with the resolution of cases, we also acknowledge the fact that there is an alternative way than to encourage litigants to go through the most expensive and a very tedious process of having these matters being resolved in courts. The restorative justice program is aimed at those cases that are identified to be not very serious cases, where we feel that perhaps because maybe a community in one way or another failed to resolve this matter and it cannot find the appropriate way of being resolved in court. So we do encourage through this restorative justice program, of course, here working with civil society to ensure that you know, communities also do play a part in terms of ensuring that these matters are being resolved, because part of the problem, if you look at the youth offenders as well, is that some of the problems why the youth get involved in crime issues is because of the lack of the lack of support from communities, you know, that they come from. And so through this restorative justice program, we do identify those cases that, you know, require communities to be empowered to ensure that these cases are being dealt with outside the justice system, the court system, through alternative means. Chair, as well, I think in terms of our small claims court and which are the courts that are more accessible in the sense that we don't require a lawyer to appear before them, which are of a smaller value as well, we had also indicated that they would, develop a framework in terms of which, you know, we integrate the small claims court with the rest of the mainstream courts. I must say that through the assistance of the lawyers, that is the private lawyers, we have now increased the size of our small claims in most of the provinces, because most people see much value in those courts. They are sort of held in a much friendlier environment, which is not very scary for litigants, and it is also dealt after hours. But of course, we are reviewing that current policy, to see exactly what needs to be done in terms of improving that particular issue. So, there was the child justice legislation that was passed in 2008, And though that legislation will only become applicable as from the 1st of April 2009, what Parliament has mandated us was to develop a framework in the manner in which is called a National Policy Framework, which is an integrated management framework of ensuring that the way the system deals with children is also more integrated, and that we also do not cause secondary victimization, but also ensure that we have alternative way of resolving cases that involve children. So we are in the process of finalizing that framework, and I think in terms of the legislation, we are expected by December to present and frame it to Parliament. We're almost complete with that framework, Chair, in terms of this issues. I've just mentioned I mentioned the issue around the prioritization of children in courts, that we have some protocols that have been developed, and also that the sexual offences court have also been targeted as another area of improvement. Okay, the other issue that relates to, and I think in the most, these are the complaints that have been levelled to the department, and this committee previously also had to deal with them. These are issues relating to maintenance and family law related issues. We had also established some kind of project, which we call them Isondlo, which tries to target those old cases in the system, but also to enable litigants or people complainants that are coming to our courts to follow up on those matters. In fact, as part of that program, we also established through a legislation that was passed by Parliament what we call maintenance investigators, who will help the complainant in following the errant husbands or partners. By tracing, because in the past the problem that women faced was the lack of information where a man would, or perhaps the partner is working, and that would not enable the court to finalize that matter quite soon. So we then established what we call maintenance investigators, and which we also link them up through an ITC system that would ensure that once we have your information by way of an ID document, we can be able to follow you up and to find out exactly the kind of resources that you do own. And so we've been able to assist quite a great number of women through that program, and some of them, I think, we've been able to attach the pensions of the responsible husbands, and some we've been able to attach property just to ensure that we realize and give that money back to women. In fact, in the KZN province, working together with the Department of Finance, we also established, because part of the problem is in that you, in cases where you recover this money, it's in the lump sum. And it's quite a big money that a person that has not been able to manage that money in that case. So that money would, in most cases, disappear quite quickly. So we then established a program of empowerment working with the Department of Finance in the KZN to ensure that those women who are beneficiary from this money, they have also been enabled to utilize that money for the profit of children, but also to ensure that there's sustainability around the issues of maintenance, that money should also be utilized to generate some income so that children cannot be dependent on other issues than to be assisted formally at school through the utilization or proper utilization of that money. But also one of the issues, Chair, was in relation to our financial system in the courts, because part of the problem was the theft of money from the courts, because we had no reliable system. So as part of that response, the department was to establish some financial system to ensure that money is properly accounted for, but also to enable that women that are coming to our courts, they should also be encouraged to establish a system where, this money can be paid into banks without them coming to court, just to avoid, the long queues that people have to stand to. So we have some projects, I think, which is called an EFT project that we've established, which is financially based, that enable these women to receive this money through their bank without having to go to court. And this, in those areas where it has been introduced, it has very helped to reduce the queues of people having to go and queue in courts for money. So now, moving to legislation, we also indicate as part of our efforts of improving the functioning of the department and also government in general, we had you know, legislation that were to pass, just to ensure that you know, we do play our role as the Department of Justice in the transformation of you know, government in general. We have legislation that were repealed. We do know that there was this Black Administration Act, which was such a very horrendous legislation that was not in keeping with our constitution, and that legislation, I think, we then was repealed through that legislation that was introduced in the year 2008. We also introduced, as part of the efforts of strengthening the independence of the judiciary, legislation that would enable the judiciary to have a separate training institute, and that legislation was passed in the year 2008. And we also have the Judicial Service Commission Amendment Act that was also passed in 2008. We also have the Jurisdiction of Regional Courts Amendment Act. This act seeks to broaden the package of services, as we know that the regional courts currently, they only deal with criminal matters. But in order to ensure that we improve the accessibility of our services in the courts, it was thought as well that we need to give the regional court some kind of civil jurisdiction, and in the main to take some of the matters, because we do know that the, you know, the litigation in the High Court is quite expensive, and so this legislation was meant just to ensure that we create an infrastructure within the regional courts where civil litigation can be conducted. This legislation, I think, in terms of implementation, will kickstart, I think, towards the end of this year. And we've been able to plan accordingly for the implementation thereof. Chair, as well, we had some kind of legislation that we had to, you know, to do to rename the high courts. As we do know that some of our high courts were still reflecting the old order in terms of names. And as I'm indicating to you now, that after the passing of that 2008 legislation, all the courts have now been sort of, you know, improved. Chair, I won't go through the list, but we've given you through the entire, you know, for that particular year, what legislation, you know, this department has sort of put to Parliament for assistance. So I know I didn't want to take much time on that, because I would have wanted to allow time for the committee to engage with the department on most of these issues. But we have also given you the various performances in terms of the areas of, you know, legislation that was passed by Parliament, one of which was the promotion of access to justice, I mean, access to information. We have also given you the numbers of matters that we have handled, and I think if you look at the second bullet, we had, out of the 61 cases that we had received, out of the numbers, out of the cases that we received, 61 were granted for that particular year, only 9 were refused, and 39 were processed within 30 days, and which shows that I think the way in which this has been processed was quite faster than what used to be in the past. But here, I won't go into those, and part of this program was also to ensure that there's an awareness program, because people were not quite aware of this legislation, so we've undertaken a number of training programs together with awareness program in communities to ensure that these services are being, you know, made aware to communities. So the other function that we have indicated is the administration of the disease estates, as well as the insolvent estates, including the administration of the guardian funds. We've also given you the figures of the kind of the numbers of cases that have been finalized. There we have two categories how we divide the estates, because there are those that are dealt with in the lower courts, and some are dealt in the master's high courts. So out of the cases that, in fact, the threshold that we utilize is about, it's 125,000, and out of the 117 cases that the department received, in other words, 81,000 of those cases were cases that were less than, were of figure less than 125, and only 36,000 were all those that were above the 125. Now, out of those, we have also just given you the, if you look at the third bullet that indicates how many of those cases, in terms of that categorization, we've been able to finalize. There were 77,000 out of the 81,000. Of those cases that were less than 125 that we finalized, and 27,179 of the 36,179 of cases that are more than 125,000 that we finalize. So if one relates in figuratively wise, we were able to finalize 88.6% of those matters that were received by the master's offices. As well in terms of the legal advice as well as the services that I've related to that are performed by the state, I mean, state attorneys have also indicated to you the total number of matters that we've been able to deal with. But just on the legal advice, we have also given you the number of the legal opinion that we've finalized, and also the bills and the international agreements that the department was able to finalize during that year under reporting. And with regard to the state attorneys, we spent almost 270, almost 300, if I were to say it, 300 million on briefs. And these briefs were, I think, 60 out of the cases, that a total of 64.4 cases or briefs were handed over to the private attorneys. I think in the main, we also provide you the breakdown. If you look at the annual report from page 100 to 112, we do give you a breakdown in terms of who were the main beneficiaries out of those matters that were handled and they were given to. And in the most, if you look at that, I think it's only black people that benefited out of it. Of course, our numbers in terms of females, counsels, because of the number of the fact that we don't have sufficient numbers of women in the profession, they were not very much significant if one looks at it. Only the male black people, counselors, were able to get more assistance in terms of the process. Chair, with regard to pardon this, this is but one of the responsibilities that the department has to deal with. We do indicate that we had processed almost out of the 2,359, we processed about 1,992 of those cases, which is about 84%. The pardons were processed. I think the slight figure that is more or less than 16%, that was still under consideration due to various circumstances pertaining to the nature of the request and so on. So I think if we do have some time, I would have allowed our CFO just to present on the financial side of it, but with your permission, Chair. Thank you very much.
The CFO can continue.
Thank you, Chief. We'll go to slide 2, slide 1. Okay, very briefly, and we'll try to make up some time. Yuan will take us through the 08-09 budget and expenditure outcome. That will be slides 1 to 7. Then I will take over and take you through the rest of the slides, which will cover our audit outcomes for the both accounts, as well as what we're doing about those specific reported audit findings. Over to you, Yuan.
Chairperson, I think, firstly, I think we need to come to you as a portfolio commissioner, I mean, as a committee, to report an improvement in overall departmental spending. Previously, we had problems with the timeliest spending of our budget. But the first slide reflects of the 8.5 billion rand that we've been allocated in 2008-09, we spent 99% of that budget compared to a 92.7 in 2006-07. So where we had a 470 million rand underspending decreased to 81%. This is part departmental specific, and we exclude the National Prosecuting Authority. The department, our expenditure was 99.4%. But in general, we want to come in to report an increase in departmental spending for departmental programs. The second slide, slide 4, gives us a sense of the spending on the various departmental programs. Now, in essence, we've got 6 programs, 5 managed under the accountability of the of the DG, and then the other one is related to the judges and magistrates' salaries. But in terms of the accountability of the accounting officer, you can see the biggest portion of our money is spent on the first, from the first five programs are spent on court services, 3.3 billion rand. The next program is National Prosecuting Authority on 2.1 billion rand. And then we do some transfers. We fund the Commission on Gender Equality, the Legal Aid Board, the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission, and the Special Investigating Unit. In essence, again, this slide confirmed 99% overall expenditure. The only area of overspending is a direct charge against the National Treasury is the salaries of the magistrates and the judges, but normally Treasury will make a supplementary allocation for that. They do that on an annual basis. On our expenditure for economic classification, and you can see compensation, we manage to spend 100% of our budget on goods and services, 99.7% of our budget. One of our areas of success was the spending on buildings and fixed structures. Now, this relates to the upgrading of our court infrastructure, a building of new courts. We managed to spend 98.5% of our budget in that financial year. The only area of underspending was the machinery and equipment. Previously, there were criticism against the Department of Justice. People used to throw around the concept of fiscal dumping. Fiscal dumping is this thing of suddenly conceptualizing expenditure during the last quarter of the financial year. Man, there were concerted efforts by management to manage our cash flow and expenditure better. I think if people can see, the green line reflects a substantial reduction in the last month of the financial year. Where we previously, in 06, 07, and 07, 08, spent about a billion rand or more than a billion rand in the last month of the financial year. Through cash flow management, timeless payment, and efficient expenditure management, we brought that down to 7.2%. I will quickly later reflect on this. But in summary, before Sandra will attend to me, or the CFO will reflect on our audit and our audit challenges and our programs to respond to this, a commitment or indication of improved departmental spending, our underspending decreased. We were one of the departments where they were quite successful with the OSD for legally qualified personnel. We absorbed those in the first phase of expenditure, within baseline. So, yes, and I've indicated to you early reprioritization. We've looked at slow spending programs and then timely allocate this money to divisions. For instance, we could have funded through dedicated expenditure reviews which assisted the course of the Yani and Northern to be established. I think the last slide, the last point in this bullet 7 reflects our indication that previously we used to spend 16% of our budget in the last month. In 2008-09, we brought it down to 8.6%. Sandra will now, the chairman, the CFO, will reflect on our audit outcomes and the ACMED activities in response to those audit outcomes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Slide 9. We received 5 audit qualifications for the previous financial year, 2008-09, and I'll briefly discuss those. The first audit qualification relates to the management of our third-party funds, previously known as deposit accounts or monies in trust. As you know, we administer these third-party funds that receive the bail, the maintenance, the fines, either on behalf of beneficiaries or on behalf of the state, in specific the National Revenue Fund, specifically if we talk about fines. Now, we were qualified by the Auditor General on our departmental revenue, in other words, those revenues that we receive in the third-party fund account that get paid over to the National Revenue Fund, that could be unplanned maintenance, fines, etc. We were also qualified on our contingent liability estimation. That is where we've estimated an amount that could be related to losses or fraud, etc., in the third-party funds account that the both accounts would have to stand in for, and also then on our disclosure note for receivables for departmental revenue. That would be a accrual accounting disclosure note. In other words, what these estimates in terms of what is receivable in departmental revenue to be placed to national revenue funds, that was also qualified. Now, the whole qualification relates to the financial management of the third-party funds account, or I'll rather say the poor financial management within that account, and I'll get to the slide in terms of the public-private partnership and what we're doing about that. So, moving away from the previous year where we had a broad qualification in terms of a lack of an accounting framework, we had specific qualifications on these three items that impact on the vote account. Then we also had a qualification on our employee benefits, in specific our provision that we made for leave payouts. Again, it's an accrual accounting disclosure note. As you know, we're moving to accrual accounting as part of the transformation process. And in essence, what we're saying is our leave weren't captured up to date in terms of our payroll system, which means that the provision that we included in the financial statement was obviously overstated or understated. Then the third qualification relates to our finance leases, and I'll discuss those two together because it's really the same, it relates to the same problem. Now, finance leases, we enter into finance leases to lease all our copiers in our courts, also some PABXs, etc. Now, as you might know, there's a transversal state fingerboard contract, RT3, that is used to enter into these finance leases. And there's specific condemnation from the Accountant General's office for using that contract and entering into these finance leases. Now, what the qualifications were about, we at National Office, we did certain calculations based on a database of information of all the lease contracts that we've entered into in all our different courts. And some of the supporting documentation for those specific lease contracts weren't available at National Office, therefore the auditors could not satisfy themselves that those calculations were in fact accurate, complete, valid, etc. So both qualifications relate to finance leases in terms of those condoned. As I said, there's a blanket approval for the condonation, but the auditors, because they could not examine all the lease contracts, could not satisfy themselves that is all in order. Then the last qualification relates to the capital and minor assets. I think you've read in the annual report that we embarked on an asset management turnaround project. The project was finalized as at the reporting date and the date of the financial statement. However, because of the change of approach by the Auditor General to extrapolate their errors, we again received a qualification on our assets. And I would just like to put it in a bit more context in terms of the existence assertion. In other words, they could not verify the assets in a specific location. They found 81 errors out of a total sample of 2,685, which means it's a 3% error rate. And for completeness, in other words, they might have found it in the location, but they could not find it in the asset register. They had a 2% error rate, again, a 59 errors out of 2,603. So, relatively speaking, based on the geographical spread of the department, really not too many errors. I think if we were in the same position as the previous year, we would not have received this audit qualification, but they, the audit approach of the Auditor General prescribed that extrapolation process. Thank you, Chair. Then the third-party funds PPP. I've provided in slide 12 a very high-level timeline for this. I think some of you might be familiar with the PPP. What we're trying to do is to remove all or most of the cash handling out of our courts, and then by doing that, transferring the risk attached there to a private party. So this private party would be responsible for the financial management and to produce or to have a fund in financial management system to administer these funds on, and we will still be responsible for certain administrative and legal responsibility. Mita next to me is the project manager for this public-private partnership project and he's available to answer any questions should you have on those. So in essence there, what we're saying, we hope to, by the end of this month, have all negotiations finalized, get the necessary DG and Treasury approvals by the end of November, sign the contract by December, then the system development will start in the new year, and we hope to have the system implemented as from the 1st of October 2010. I think page 137 in the annual report also discussed a bit more detail of that. Now, this PPP will not only curtail our bail maintenance, funds that I've discussed earlier, it will also take care of the guardian fund trust accounts that we're responsible for. Then, what are the key root causes for our audit qualifications, and what are we doing about it? And I've really tried to just pick the top five. I think moving to accrual accounting is really a challenge, I think, for most departments, most probably. We do not have the systems to produce that information, and therefore, I think four of the five qualifications relate to accrual accounting disclosure notes. I've mentioned the lack of systems, the BAS, specifically for the votes that Jade has in relation to the third-party funds. The vacancies, inadequate job levels of our finance staff across the country, and then also inconsistencies in our staffing structures in the regions, which we're trying to attend to. Obviously, we need funding to address those things. Inadequate training or skills shortage, I don't think that's new to you. And then lack of reliable, timely, accurate management information relating to financial matters in order to be proactive and to prevent audit qualifications. So what are we doing about it? We're having regular meetings with our regional heads, with our branch managers, with our finance directors within the regions, in an attempt to make them more aware of where we're going with accrual accounting and obviously to build some capacity. Then we have audit facilitators in all our regions. We have a national audit facilitator who then combines all these audit action plans, which I'll discuss just now. And we've initiated some task teams to resolve our leases issue, make sure we have all those lease contracts. Then, as from the end of September, in other words, end of October, we will produce the first 6 monthly financial statements for the vote account as required by National Treasury. And from there on, we will produce monthly financial statements, which will then obviously assist us in terms of being proactive in terms of where our problem areas are, specifically in relation to disclosure notes. Third-party funds, the implementation of our PPP, asset management, there is initiatives there. I think important is our asset scanners. That just makes it so much easier. We've got so many. We've got hundreds and thousands of assets out there, you can imagine, with about 800 offices. Sustaining the efforts in terms of the asset turnaround projects, our asset register, quarterly verifications as prescribed. And from national office perspective, we monitor. We verify, we visit offices, and we obviously assist by means of coaching. Asset controllers have been appointed for most offices and have undergone training. We're doing BAS JYP reconciliations. We've got standardized policies, procedures, etc., which people have been trained on. Then supply chain management, I think it's important that we touch on that because you might have picked up in the audit report as well as the annual report, my financial statements as well, that there's some irregular expenses due to non-compliance to tender processes, etc. So supply chain management underwent a whole business process re-engineering. And next to that was the organizational structure to support those business processes. Obviously, work management charts for all staff, individual performance contracting, etc. And that will then assist us in terms of making sure that we comply to all those supply chain management prescripts, we're performance-driven, and that we have the appropriate capacity in place. I've mentioned extensive and ongoing consultation with all the relevant stakeholders. Then the audit action plans. Most probably you're also familiar with some of these audit action plans. Treasury require us to prepare these audit action plans. We've just changed the approach slightly from an audit action plan per region at the national office to a financial statement component audit action plan. So in other words, we will have one for asset management, we might have one for leases, etc. And that is just to make sure that the national office champion dealing with asset management, for example, really takes care, if I can call it that, of all the identified audit findings in relation to that specific financial statement component. So I've listed there the audit action plans that we've already prepared, that were sent out to regions. The regions sent their progress reports on these back on the 6th of October. defendants are currently verifying those progress reports and action steps and comments, etc. So unfortunately, I don't have that report ready for you. And then the action plan in relation to employee benefits and the disclosure notes, very critical for us, was only forwarded to the regions last week, and we expect that progress report back on the 22nd. The audit action plan on performance information is work in progress, and again, you might have heard that the audit qualification on performance information has been delayed for another year, I think, which gives us sufficient time in terms of addressing those specific reported audit findings. Critical for us, we do not only focus on the audit qualification. If you look at the audit action plans, which I can provide to you, you will notice that it covers all audit findings raised by the Auditor General throughout their audit. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member, you can engage with the report. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'll start with the relevant question not written here. One, what is the relationship between the investigators and the prosecutors? Why I'm asking this is because the quality of statement and everything is a problem, and also the quality of drawing of the charges. If there are not there's no relationship between them to inform each other, it's a problem. And the two, the integrity of exhibits, example, rape cases and murder cases, are those exhibits preserved in such a way that they retain the original evidence which the magistrate can see and deduce from that particular man or exhibit that really is the proper exhibit used in that particular crime. According to the magistrate, how are you being frustrated by the lack supply of DNA results? And also the ballistic results. There are so many things which are sent to the forensic science, but the case has been reminded for several times just because those things are not supplied. You mentioned something about the theft of money in court. How many cases have been registered? And how many members have been arrested, in particular those theft, and the money involved? Now on page 3, bulletin 5, you said protect and promote the rights of the vulnerable groups, including children, elderly. Do you have any policy in order to control those things so that if any, this committee would like to be supplied with the document to see as to whether that thing exists? Your page 4 of the report, we receive a lot of outcry concerning the jurisdiction of the court. Let's take, for example, I'm from Limpopo. There are cases which are committed in Chamtumbu, but they are not sent to Makado, they are taken to Toyando. How far are you with the court jurisdiction in order to keep those time off? Because it's a problem. You talk about the new high court which you are envisaging in Limpopo. What happened to the high court in Toyando? Is that court still exist? If not, why?
your page 6, my page 6, very interesting. In some of the figures, you are able to give figure, not percentage. But to this one, temporary, you say the reduction of a temporary staff, you show about 7.5% and 6.5%. What is the actual number? What is the actual figure? Because where we see percentage, sometimes it's misleading, because if you arrest a person, one person, and you charge him, it's 100%. You know? Your page 7, I'm not taking everything, it's my field, this one. Page 7? Yeah. Page 7, okay, you talk about the saving of time by reminding the criminal in absentia and also the witnesses. How will you deal with the situation in rural areas? Because I can agree with you in urban areas that you can send those things in order to inform them. But in rural areas, what do you do? Okay, your page 8. I'm very much interested with this case, it's warrant issued. Even on the police side, you find that the document has been filed pending the arrest of a suspect. Now, on those cases where warrant issued, how many, if you can give the number now, how many cases of those warrant issued were suspects arrested and brought to court by means of a warrant? Because I know you'll say that it's warrant issued, okay, I think I'll be coming with number 9. You know, in our country, there's a problem of these general practitioners. You find a doctor, you go, you are complaining about the heart, he will give you a Panadol. Now, you said here, civil cases. How many magistrates do qualify for civil matters? Because you find that it's an ordinary magistrate attending to criminal cases. But when you go to the expertise of civil cases, so you find that, no, it's something less than. How many are those qualified in our country to deal with civil cases? You talk about the cases, the strike of raw cases. I'm interested to hear how many of those struck of the roll were returned to the roll and placed to the roll. How many are they? We don't need a percentage. Come with the figure. Number last is number 12, page 12. No, it's not number last, two left. Number 12. Yes, restorative justice program. Very interesting. We will need to know how many of those cases where you said no, you have applied this project. Yes. Number one from last is page 7. On the financial matters, page 7. Bulletin 2. Underspending decreased with 83 million from 165 million 2007-2008 financial year. What was the reason of this underspending? Can you explain to us? It's a lot of money here. We need service delivery. Number last is page 9. He has an employee benefit. The audit report was qualified due to the lack of control over timely capturing of leave taken. Is there no supervisor to check on this work time and again? Why it came to this type of we have this type of problem? Thanks.
Can you respond to those questions, please?
Chair, I will also just request the members of the delegation to assist where I don't respond to all of the issues that are raised in them. But I will also defer the financial questions to the CFO to respond to. Chair, on the first issue around the investigation and the collaboration between the prosecution as well as the police, I mean, this is one of the matters that I think in terms of the review we identify that was the major issue. I think, I mean, it's something that is reported. I think we can't run away from it. That part of the problem why there was a very high withdrawal of matters was that some of these matters were poorly investigated, which could not enable the prosecutor to take appropriate action. Now, what was done through the review, firstly, was to identify the skills shortage in terms of the police, what areas or what matters that require, you know, for police to increase. And a part of this program on the review was done an audit in terms of, you know, trying to create a separate dispensation for investigators, because one of the problems, I think, if you look at the current state of affairs in the police, is that if you are an ordinary, you know, uniform police and investigators, the remuneration are the same. And this has been part one of the problem why you would find that there were not much skills that were. So part of the review and what was recommended, which would then be implemented, I think, as we move on, is that, you know, in order to improve on that quality, firstly, we have to ensure that we have the right qualification and skills of investigators. And I think that's a problem that currently we've identified. But of course, these specific training in terms of, you know, the police that they've undertaken, which tries to improve the investigation capacity of police in various categories of crime, but also to ensure that the scene of crime, the management of exhibit is also improved as part of this process. So, now, the other issue that I also need to indicate, part of this review and, you know, this kind of integrated models that we are piloting, we started with the regional courts, is to create a mechanism where we find the police officer together with the police sitting together in looking at cases. In fact, we have a process which we call a screening process. In other words, what happens is that an investigator or a police that is charged with investigating of the matter will sit together with the police and look at the case and to ensure that all the material evidence that is required is in the docket. If not, that case would not be enrolled. And this is a way of trying to improve this particular problem of investigation, as I've indicated. But also part of the investigation, I think this also relates to the analysis part of it, in which I think DNA or ballistic. We do know part of the problem has been the capacity countrywide, because part of this analysis are done by the Department of Health and some are done by the police. I think the health, they do the blood in analysis, but then the rest of the others are done by the police. The issue there was that there were delays in the finalization of that analysis report because there was less numbers of personnel to manage such investigation. In fact, the most one here in Cape Town, which was doing a number of analysis for the rest of the country, that's where the delay was in here. But then what we have done in terms of the review, certainly is to create also separate dispensation for the experts that are dealing with this analysis in the police environment,
to ensure that you have people that are better remunerated and that are also better qualified. Because part of the problem is that in the police, you know, the payment that is done to salary-wise to an expert who does the analysis was not commensurate with the private sector. And so you have the number of, you know, professionals that will live in the public service, because I think in the private sector, the payments are much better. So we're now also, that's part of the seven-point plan that we've introduced to create a separate dispensation for the experts that are working in this to ensure that we can retain this within government. But as well, at the operational level, we have structures. I think part of this screening process, prosecutors now in certain areas, you know, where we are piloting this idea, work together with the investigators to guide in the manner in which the investigation needs to be created. I think we have what is called the prosecutor-led investigation initiatives that are running in some provinces. I know in KZN we have few of those that are running. But part of the review is to create a coordinated mechanism that would ensure in all provinces or in all areas where you have prosecutors working together with, that there's a framework. So one of the frameworks that we have developed, and I think I haven't reported on it fully here, is a protocol on management of cases that are coming to court, which ensures that from the initial state of the investigation that, you know, there is some kind of collaboration with the prosecutors to avoid an instance where investigation is carried out and only to find that not much, you know, has been done with regard to the collation of the necessary, you know, material that is required for the court. So we do have, in terms of the protocols that I've just mentioned here, Chair, that have been finalized. I think we have one that deals with the bail. We have one that deals with the management of cases in the courts, you know, with regard to the regional courts, because we want to pilot this idea, you know, in one, you know, in a small environment without having to go into a bigger environment which has more, you know, issues. So Chair, around the exhibit management is also but one of those matters that I think as part of the review, we are trying to strengthen to ensure that, firstly, that the collation of and the preservation of the exhibit is also dealt with, you know, appropriately. There is a system that I didn't report on it, by the way, on the exhibit, which is an IT-related exhibit, which ensures that within the police environment, we also create an IT-related, you know, exhibit management system, which is, I think, has been piloted in a number of areas, which I think will become, you know, roll out countrywide. Together with this, I think, which also links up to the first issue, I spoke about the modernization program. This does not only relate to the Department of Justice, but that modernization program sits at the center of the criminal justice system. In other words, it involves a number of departments excluding this. And so we have developed, like, for example, as I've indicated on the case management, there's a system that links up prosecutors, you know, with the rest of what happens in the court. That also includes the members of the correction services in terms of how they manage the witnesses. I mean, they manage, you know, detainees. Similarly, there is also what we call an e-docket system that was developed within the police. That e-docket ensures that in terms of the management of information, as soon as the, you know, a docket is registered within the court, the prosecutor does not necessarily have to wait until that docket is brought to court, but through the system there is a linkage that is established. And that also helps to minimize the theft of dockets within the courts and so on. So, but these are efforts. I'm not trying to say that the picture, you know, is such correct and perfect as we speak at the moment, but these are kind of initiatives that we are taking, that are taking place to deal with these issues. I'm the first to acknowledge that, you know, the processing of the DNA and other issues, I can't give you the numbers now, but I can, if there is a specific request, I think on this later on the case backlog, just to indicate out of these cases that we've identified that are lying in the system, how many of those cases are cases where, you know, they are being lying in the system because the DNA results and the ballistic tests have not been completed. We had a huge issue here. I must say, I think, and I think as far as the Pretoria office is concerned, where this analysis is done, we have tried to step in and to improve the system by, as I've indicated to you, establishing the experts, in ensuring that the expertise that are in there are nurtured,
and that we can be. But we have also a targeted process that is linked to the case backlog, which identifies those matters that are delayed because of that investigation. And then the police then are being mandated to follow up those matters to ensure that they are being sort of speeded up. But say, I think we will give this particular kind of numbers as to how many out of the system are these cases when I think when I go back, because through the case backlog we have specific numbers exactly what the causes of the delays of this case backlog and how we target, you know, those specific issues to deal with them. Say, on the theft of money, I just mentioned this. I think the CFO has also alluded to this. Part of the audit report that was negative against the department was the lack of appropriate control mechanism or systems in courts, which, you know, led to a process where money, you know, got missing in the courts. I think we have, I think in the previous report, and I don't know whether we still have that report, we have identified, I think there are about 44 courts where this maintenance money, in particular it was maintenance money, you know, was stolen. And we had identified, and I think there was a particular project that we had, you know, set up just to follow up on those cases. I think some of them have been arrested, and some have been, you know, taken out of the system. We can provide details around those because there is a specific report in terms of that particular issue. So on the issues around the vulnerable groups, I must say this is but one of the chief directorate that was created in the department later, because we acknowledge that I think the way we had looked at the criminal justice system was just to not take into account the interests of the vulnerable groups. Now, as part of this effort as well, we are now, as I've indicated, to the various you know, policy frameworks that we are trying to deal with. Especially on the sexual offences code, I did make reference to an intersectoral, you know, framework that we are developing to ensure that the way we manage issues that involve vulnerable groups, that from the police, you know, from the initial state of the police up to the court level, that there is more integration in terms of all the departments that are dealing with those specific issues. So there are various policies that have been proposed, and which I think at this stage, as we speak, they have not been finalized. I made mention of the sexual offences, framework that has been developed currently. That I think the DG of Justice and Constitutional Development chairs that framework. I mean the structure within the. I also made reference to the issues around the children in terms of what are the kind of policy angles were set up. I mentioned issues around the interim protocol, you know, in managing cases that involve that is awaiting trial prisoners or children. I also mentioned around the children's the Child Justice Act, which is now an act, 2008, which also provides for a framework in terms of how those cases that involve children are going to be managed, of course, including as well these elements of integrating the mechanism of all departments that are in the system. We will present that, I think, around, in terms of the legislation, we're supposed to present that in December of this year. So I'm saying this about some of the policies that currently are being developed to deal with these issues. I didn't get the question quite clear, but I sense the issue that relates to the jurisdiction. I'm not quite familiar with the area you're mentioning, but I don't know whether the issue relates to the, what is that project of the, there is demarcation, I think. I don't know whether it relates to those, where you still have boundaries that are still in the old order that do not reflect the current one. It's quite a very laborious project. I must indicate, though we started this project some time ago, we are almost on the verge of finalizing it. It's a more complicated process in the sense that, firstly, it does not only require justice to demarcate how your magisterial district must look at. We have to look at the local government needs, because part of the problem is that our magisterial districts are not aligned to the municipality district. So part of this project was to ensure that we take into account the role that is played by the local government structures into the system. Similarly, what then needs to be done is to demarcate the areas according to the proposal, and that requires a very laborious process by the Department of Land Affairs, because we have to redraw the boundaries. And some of those boundaries take a bit longer. In fact, as we speak to you at the moment, we've finalized all of the
commissioner?
I think my question was, let me rephrase it. What are you doing with the cases reported? Because that still those cases which are reported in Bangalore Corp there, but it won't be taken to it won't be tried. The one let me not take Bangalore Corp. Let us go to Khaute, where you are. There are the former Kutatswana, like Tselopili, Gotembaele, you know. You find that a case, instead of taking that case in the nearest court there, you are still referring that court to the former Kutatswana just because the jurisdiction of the court was demarcated that way. That was the question. Not the process of demarcating.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I think the process that I was trying to explain, I was trying to indicate, because currently legally there is nothing that you can do. That legislation still exists. You can't take, because the jurisdiction has been determined by the existing legislation. Now, for that legislation to be changed, we have to undergo this process that I'm explaining now. And I'm just saying we have now finalized almost out of the nine provinces, we have seven of those, their maps have now been finalized, which could then be gazetted into new ministerial districts. Only three are standing. Until that process is finalized, we're still going to find this process. Because I know it causes a lot of confusion as well to members of the public. They don't understand, because some of these areas are sort of demarcated by the constitutional amendment that we make, but as justice, we still follow the old thing. So I'm just saying legally, the Minister of Justice can only demarcate once the process is finalized. For now, we can't proclaim, you know, those districts according to perhaps what people are feeling at the moment and so on until the process is finalized. But I do want to come to the point about the issue, because this does not only relate to the district court. The issue that you mentioned about Toyando, as we speak at the moment, that court is not fully and optimally utilized. And that's part of the problem why we had created this circuit court in Polokwane, because part of the issue is to enable those judges to also have powers to hear matters that are outside the former Toyando. But as you speak at the moment, and that's part of the legislation that I've just made reference to, and which I think the Superior Court legislation will sort of finalize this once the Minister presents it to Parliament, because you still have high courts that are also demarcated in the old way, where you find that the people are physically residing in one area, but they can't get those services. They have to travel long distances because of this demarcation process. So that will be addressed by the Superior Court legislation that would ensure that the process is. But I wanted to explain this point around Toyando, that as far as the High Court is concerned, that court is fully functional as we speak. I think there's one judge, there was one post that was advertised of that judge that died. But as we speak at the moment, I'm not quite certain whether that post has now been filled, the second post. There were two judges, I think, posted in that area. But that court is fully operational as we speak at the moment. Our intention, as I've indicated to you, is that we're going to be creating and we're going to be proposing to the minister now, in the interim, whilst awaiting the demarcation of the boundaries according to the High Court, a local division of the Gauteng province, that is the Northern Gauteng, so that the JP can be able to send judges to the Polokwane who can hear matters within the entire, you know, area of the Limpopo province, so that people don't have to travel long distances from Polokwane to Pretoria for services and so on. But that's part of the issues that we're looking at. I think the issue around the reduction of the, I don't have the exact numbers. I don't know whether Vusi, do you have the exact, except for the percentage? Did someone pick up the figure? I think that's information that we can provide at some point in time. The issue around the video postponement in rural areas, as I've indicated, that part of the modernization program that the department has started, we have made sure that we ensure that all courts are online. I must say, as we speak to you now, except for few or new courts that are in operation at the moment, we have all our courts online, which is it's a first phase of the modernization program. Now, whether that court is in a rural area or, you know, is in a semi, you know, urban area or, you know, wherever it is, but in terms of our current IT framework, we're enabled, depending on the needs, of course, if it's a rural area, one of the issues that we have to look at, because part of this video arrangement, you know, the project, we are targeting those highly densely populated prisons. So if we've got a prison in a rural area that is highly densely populated, then that requires this intervention. There's nothing in terms of the system that prevents us from, you know, implementing that system, because already we do have the platform in place. I think on the issues around the warrant of arrest, I think I'll come back on this as well, because this links up with the issues around the case backlog, because what was identified in the case backlog project team, those methods that are lying in the system, because warrants of arrest have been issued and people are not coming to court, we do indicate what the number is, and also do indicate exactly what intervention, how many of those people we can bring back. But I don't have those figures as we speak at the moment, so those are methods that I can provide later on too. Well, on the magistrates that are qualified to deal with the civil matters, I must say civil matters, as we speak at the moment, district, in each and every, I wouldn't say in each and every, especially the major centers, we do have in each and every district court, a civil court. So there is a civil magistrate who can provide, you know, the numbers in terms of how many of those. The only dilemma is with regard to the regional courts. Regional courts were purely criminal matters. I mean, we're purely hearing criminal matters, and that's an area where, in terms of that legislation that we have, you know, suggested that it be, you know, finalized, we're going to be appointing, you know, additional people that are properly skilled and qualified to hear civil matters, because that legislation is quite specific in terms of who should be hearing these matters. It does not require any other person who has no skill or kind of qualification to hear those matters. So that project, as we speak at the moment, as I've indicated to you, we have not as yet implemented it, because we are still doing the training of the magistrates, also doing the training and recruitment of the necessary personnel to support, you know, this new model. But it also takes into account the divorce courts. I think we do have pilots that we're doing on the divorce courts. We have five of those pilot courts. I think one is in Durban, one in Polokwane, and then the one is in Cape Town here, and then others in Bloemfontein, as well as other provinces that are just forgotten now. But the idea was to integrate those services. In other words, when people go to a regional court, they go for a civil matter, be it a divorce matter or any other civil matter, they must have those accesses within available within the short distances of their travel and what the problem is at the moment, because people still have to travel to across provinces to access those services. So it is one way that I think this will be brought. And I think the issue that you're raising, we can provide the information around the district courts, how many of those magistrates are currently hearing the civil matters. So I think the number is easy to get in there. But also we can provide, in terms of our preparation for this new, the implementation of this new legislation, how many of those magistrates we have trained in preparation for the implementation of the legislation. Similarly, with regard to struck off role, I think I won't have the details now. I don't know, remember, you have details of matters that where we struck off the role and how many of those were returned back to the role. I wouldn't have that now. I think it is the information that, have you got that?
Not necessarily, Chairperson, because we have the information at the summary level. But maybe if you allow me, the cases which are struck off the roll, the same with those where the warrant of arrest are issued, can either be a case where it can end up coming back to the roll. And let me deal first with the case struck off the roll. If it comes back, it comes back with a new case number. That's how the system works. So it becomes very difficult in certain instances to identify those. But as Mr. Jen has indicated, as part of the case backlog, those cases where warrants of arrest were issued, where cases are serious and they were part-head, it is easy to track them because they have to come back to the system to be finalized. But where process hasn't gone far, for instance, where a person has not pleaded yet, it is easy because it gets out of the system. When it comes back, it's a new case number altogether. Our ICMS system, we're looking at it to make sure that we're able to track those cases so that we are able to see how far cases are being recycled within the system.
Chair, that's for me the last question that I was supposed to answer. It's on the reparative justice program. I think this speaks to the diversion program. How many cases we have diverted? I don't have the exact figure now, but I can tell you we started this project about 3 years ago. I think that we started from 6,000 and we moved from 6,000. It was 20,000, and I think the last year, that is the way that you are reporting, and I think we are at 44,000, but I think it's subject to correction because that's the figure we have. These are cases that, under the restorative justice program, of course they involve in the most children that we have diverted from the courts. Through other means where we allow parties to talk about the matter but also enable them, because in some instances you find that it's substance abuse, which instead of sending the person to jail, you can find an institution that can rehabilitate the person without having to go the entire route. And so those are cases that we identify from the system where we enable parties, that we give them a chance of resolving those matters by talking to themselves without, you know, letting the court interfere in those issues. So we have added, I think, the number that I've just indicated now. I think the number is increasing on a yearly basis, but we'll give you the correct figure. We do have the correct figure for this year. I think it's about 44,000, if I don't make a mistake. But I think that's one of the issues that I think, Chair, I'll But part of this, if I was just maybe to respond and just maybe broaden the committee, this restorative justice program is that also includes other mechanisms. You know that I think part of the matter that we have presented to Parliament, I'm not too sure whether it has reached the NCOP, is the it's the finalization of the legislation around the role of the traditional court in the administration of justice. Because it is our view that if that legislation is finalized, it would have a very huge impact in terms of assisting courts in dealing with matters that can best be dealt with by our traditional leaders. Because part of the problem, as we speak currently, is that everybody rushes to court and they want their matters to be resolved there, and yet there is a much cheaper way that these matters, if we can, you know, try and promote the role that the traditional courts can play in this regard by giving them sufficient requirements. So I think part of that, the intention of that legislation is also to integrate with this restorative justice program. In the number of ways that would enable that, you know, these issues are not only the department's role to deal with them, but we also involve the broader community as part of the solution. Part of this as well that we are still investigating, just for information's sake as well, Chair, is the role of our community courts, and which we don't have in some of the major areas. And these are areas where we're trying to promote the involvement of communities in the resolution of disputes, so that the people can, in a small way, you know, resolve matters. Because if you look at the nature of the crimes that we have at the moment, they start being small, petty crimes, and if there's no mechanism of resolving them, they end up being much bigger problems. So I think this intervention will help us, you know, proactively deal with the causes of crime, and also in a way that the communities also have a role in terms of which they can, you know, impact and, you know, be party to the issue of the administration of justice. Can I ask Sandra just to deal with the audit and the finance issues?
Okay. I thought maybe if we can finalize the specific here and then go to the financial issues. You see, the first thing is that it's unfortunate we just received the report now. We lack a lot of information. Yeah? But you see, in terms of your report, you're not telling us as to how many vacancies are there, so that we are able to can measure as to whether there was a real reduction in terms of what you're saying, what you reported to us or not. You know, they're just giving us, because we've not gone through the report itself ourselves, it is difficult to can measure as to whether there's improvement, there's whatever. You know, the second area you're talking about is around the transformation of the department in terms of the demographics of the country. You know, I have just been to a court yesterday. What I hear in that court, and referring specifically, and it's that generally that's what's happening nationally, is that Africans are not given a chance, you know, to enter the specific area we dealt with, to oversee civil cases. You know, there's blockage, and that's what I got, precisely because if Africans want to deal with a specific issue, they are subjected to other intimidations or push out of the system. you know. Now, I'm saying, in terms of your program on the transformation of this particular department, we don't have a picture, a report that indicates that this is what we have done, this is where we are, whatever. I'm specifically saying, you hear this from magistrates. We are not sure in terms of the prosecuting authority what is happening there. If we can have some idea, and because you're saying you have dealt with a specific area, you've moved very far. No? But when you go, there are a lot of complaints that are coming out, you know. And that is why my first areas I told my chairperson was, I think it is important that in terms of this specific area, we get a full report, but we also go into the field, do oversight and interview magistrates and get a feel as to what is happening on the ground. You know, because you might be giving us this specific report, reported to you by specific seniors, whilst you don't know exactly what is happening on the ground, you know. And that is the issue we're trying to raise now, you know. You see, unfortunately, my experience in as far as, and that will come in terms of dealing with the auditor general. I've been in school afterwards. Issues that you get when they are being substantiated, well, I'm not sure what is happening. When they are being substantiated, when you call the AG office to deal with those specific issues, there are a number of issues, because if you look at the audit opinion, you know, I'll just glance through it now. A number of questions arise, but unfortunately, you know, we've learned our researcher and the auditor general to just come and give us a broader picture, because some of the issues are not clear, you know. And I think it is important that the issues you are raising around, and that links to your staff complement, you know. If you don't have proper systems in place, you know, and that's what you're saying in terms of your own report, you know, we don't know how long has this been happening, you know. We don't know how far are you in resolving that specific problem. Because in terms of your own report, those things don't come out clear to us, so that we are able to can measure as to what improvements are there, you know. And those are the, I think, I'm just probably saying these are the areas we would want more information to come from you, so that we are able to can, you know, measure and look at this specific report as to, because you see, an audit opinion that comes from the auditor general, in terms of the report that you are giving us, you know, you are reading it from a different angle, we will read it from a different angle. We'll have different opinions. Because if you have as indicated by the auditor general, that's not good at all. That's not good. You can't say you're improving. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Lewis will be the last one. Honorable Mokobi, Honorable Shani, and Honorable Nzimak. Thank you, Chair. My question might relate to the process of transformation, maybe. I'm not sure, in because we haven't indeed have time to peruse the document. I'm not sure what is this 3 hour 50. Is it the work of the magistrate and the judges? 3 hour 50. And if that is the work, how much do these people earn per hour? And are they supposed to be working for 3 hour 50? Or is it a problem of a system or transformation? Maybe one would get that, because if that is the case, then there is a serious problem in the justice system. Precisely because the performance of the department lies here, where there is an outcome in terms of justice to the people. That is where your performance lies. That is where the department needs to be judged. To what extent does our people receive this at court level? And if it is at the price of 3 hour 50, it's really sad. And then if it's a transformation matter, let us know so that something needs to be done
in terms of that. Usually, my common experience is that at public service, you go to work 8 o'clock, you knock somewhere 4 o'clock or a past 4. So this thing, it might be happening or not happening, one doesn't know. Otherwise, if it's supposed to be like that, other hours is served. I don't know who is stealing. Is it the magistrate or a judge or what? It's really a concern to me, because otherwise there will be no out. That's why you have this type of court backlogs. That is so huge. Maybe precisely because there's no performance measures at that level, where certain magistrates or judges are supposed to be linked to key performance indicators of some sort or what. I think maybe one need to be clarified, so that if it is a system problem or transformation problem, legislators must begin to engage on the matter and to see how do we improve that. And also this thing of loosened document. It's really, you know, a cause of concern, because the documents are evidence in court. But if they have been lost at that level, you know, we need to do something. We need to have measures of tracking this document so that you know who is the culprit that is responsible for documents. And once a document is lost, that culprit, that person, must be held accountable. If not, then this person must be taken to task. I think that is the issue that I would want to raise. My worry is that the outcome of the Department of Justice is at that level. And if we only work for 3 hours, it's a problem. Maybe we need to do something as legislators. Thank you.
Mr. Chani.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm just before I raise my questions, I just want to raise a concern that, and notwithstanding the fact that in terms of financial matters, the department will still appear before the relevant committees for further interaction on those issues raised. But contrary to the legislative mandate of the department, your mission and your vision, you continue, or you seem to be engaging yourself in breaching the law. And that fact is also being picked up by the auditor insofar as your non-compliance with the Treasury regulation, your non-compliance with all those legislations that are there, coupled with your underspending tendencies, which in my view are also in breach of the law. Now, the predicament I'm in is that how do you then, whilst on the one hand, you've got a mandate to uphold the law and ensure that our constitution is protected, but on the other hand, you make yourself guilty of breaching the law. That is a serious concern for myself, and I would want to hear your reflections on that. Number two, on the point of your effort to improve service delivery insofar as your mandate of building more courts is concerned. Almost 6 courts were supposed to have been built but could not be completed during the period under review. And you are saying that they could not be completed due to poor performance by the contractors. Can you elaborate further on what you mean by poor performance by the contractor? And what steps are you taking to correct that? In terms of the TRC processes, the final reparations, I just want to get a reflection from yourself if there are any outstanding beneficiaries and what is the number involved in that. The small claims courts, do we still have any number of those courts that are not yet as yet designated, or are they now all of them that have 88 designated courts? I would need a clarity on that. The high courts, the backlog at the courts, it's still huge. I'm sure you are also acknowledging. But I would want you to give us the statistics with regard to the labor courts backlog. What is the real picture there? Because in terms of your main report, it only gives statistics from the period October to March. It does not tell us what the figures from April, that is the previous year, to the end of this year under review. What is the real picture there? In your slides, you are not making any reference to the labor court. But I would want you to reflect on the labor court and give us statistics in terms of the backlog there. Vacancy. No, let me go back to the land claims courts. I can see these courts are performing very badly. I wonder if they are up to speed with the consequence of this slow pace insofar as those issues relating to land can cause into our country. But that is one of the courts that are poorly performing, but one is not preview of the reasons thereof. If you could just share with us what are the reasons for such, and what is it that the department is doing to fast track the number of matters that needs to be handled by this particular court. Your vacancy rate, I share the sentiments with my colleagues. You can't, when last year, the previous year, 2008 level, you were at 15% vacancy rate, and then you move 0.5% and say you have made a significant decrease, when you still have got 14.5% vacancy rate. It's still too high. It now confirms the report that we received during our oversight visits, like in the Northern Cape and those that we did in the area that we stay, where people were complaining about the fact that the department employ particularly magistrates once a year, and that's it. If any vacancies appear, nothing has been done. So really there you are not moving. The vacancy rate is still too high, and something needs to happen on that. You must tell us what is it that you are going to do. This particular, we are almost halfway through this year now. Would like, if you can just zoom into this year and say, well, because last year we have done 0.5, this year as we stand now, this is where we are with regard to our efforts to fill in the vacancies in the department. We would want you to reflect on it so that you convince us that you are on track to recover. We don't have to wait for 12 months and then only next year when you come here again, you still say you have moved another inch, you are 14%. It's not helping us insofar as service delivery is concerned. You had the previous year, 7 and 8, you had more than 3,000 people employed on temporary basis. What is the situation now? What happened to those people? Are they now permanent, or they are still temporary, or what is the situation? We'd want you to give details on that. Your employment equity, your performance there is still less than satisfactory. What are the problems? In terms of your policy, it's supposed to be 50-50, and 2% of the people with disabilities. You are still at 1%, that is at the end of last financial year, for people with disabilities, and something like 36% overall. Far from your 50% target. What is the state as we speak now? And I will always say, as we speak now, I understand that the report is ending there, but we need to get indication of whether there are improvements, because we are almost halfway through this financial year. We might come again here again next year, you still are there, and we never interrogated that and even checked it against the current, the pace that you are in now. Well, I think those will be the major questions that will come from myself. Others have been covered by my colleagues. I have picked up, I don't know if I'm not reading the statements well, that there is a contradiction between what you are, your slide, insofar as your slide shows that you have underspent, but in terms of this main report, it shows an over expenditure. I'm not sure whether it's myself who's not reading both reports well or what, but I would want the CFO to reflect on that as you are given the opportunity to speak. Thank you, Chair.
Louis? Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, I'm also covered by some of in some of the questions that my colleagues raised, Chair, my traditional concern of the equity issues and the vulnerable groups. I think that the question there, Chair, which I need to really make it quite to come out quite clear, is that in terms of what the reflections that were made, is that the policy is still to come out, except as the referral to the children's services. But maybe I also need to ask the Chair the status of the secure care facilities, as to where are we now, and who takes the main responsibility in terms of driving that, the provision of those secure care facilities, because they relate to children. I also have a concern, Chair, that if you say you are responsible for access to justice as such, and you also take serious concern on children, on vulnerable groups, gender issues, Chair. You see, Chair, there's still a problem with these marriages, for instance, where if the civil unions, they call them, I think, they still, I think, in my assessment in terms of practice, currently, Chair, that they still above the your customs, your customary, and your sort of your old common law kind of. You see, in particular when it comes to the claims, the general claims of insurance. You see, for instance, if you work in mines, Chair, and you've had all these other wives, if your current wife present herself as a civil union holder, that person is regarded, greater than the other one. And I thought that, Chair, as we continue with transformation, even in practice, these things would really change. The other matter, Chair, that I would like to get a status of things is the Equality Court. I'm reading the Equality Court, Chair, because the Equality Court, the Equality Court, Chair, the main... one of the main stakeholders there is disabled people. Chair, they still tend back, even women with disabilities. I have a case now, Chair, in KZN, where social worker had to broke down before the magistrate, because the magistrate was throwing out the case, and the social worker tried her best, you know, to make the, but I mean, she's only entitled to a report, you know, to the court, but not nothing beyond that. She can't influence the decision. She's not a lawyer. She's not anything. But she, in her report, in her investigations, it does indicate the violation, you know, and but the magistrate is not convinced by the argument, which raises also, Chair, the question of this quality of prosecutors and the preparation. There's no time for them to prepare. It's one prosecutor, the staffing of this court. We, you know, if we really saying we are transforming and we are access, I mean, we are serious about access to justice, then you have a prosecutor that is ill prepared to go to court because he has no time or she has no time. The pressure, I mean, the I don't know whether we have ratios, I mean, courts in terms of how many cases a prosecutor should do, and we've investigated that that prosecutor would have an ability and the capacity to read and prepare, you know, go through the evidence, prepare the arguments, you know, and you know, because you know, I'm also talking about, I'm referring to also to the staffing, you know, in the courts. If we are about access to justice, you know, a citizen got a court order that was selling his, because I come from rural areas, sure, who was selling his animals. Somebody, a pound master and the people, they sold this thing. It just happened to be at a stock safe, you know, and he saw, oh, here's my properties, you know, here's my animals are being sold here, you know. Try to stop and when we go to court same time to get the papers, you know, the details of the presentation that was made that was soliciting the court order. I mean the registrar or whatever the person called. Those things, I don't know whether it takes the turnaround time for the registrar to have those things got, because maybe you would have got a lawyer on the spot to stop that, or he might have got better support or better information, and he would have perhaps accessed justice better if these things were done. And I'm glad that there is a reflection that was made by Gianni on the traditional court, and I can only hope, Chair, that. You see, for instance, in the Zululand areas, I come from KwaZulu-Natal, in the Zululand area, the chiefs, I'm just making a statement that says, Chair, you know, the chiefs there, for instance, and it talks to the vulnerable groups as well, the chiefs there are charging, say, if you are to access in their lands, tribal land. If you are to access an RTP, you have your children. Say, I have my children, Chair, and my children are now old, and some of them are women, and you know, and they when they are supposed to get an RTP house, there's something called a Konza fee, you know, to the chief, which you have to pay in order for the decision to allocate a piece of land for the RTP house and all. So I'm glad that he is saying that he's linking what the traditional court would do, because then we will even regulate. We will even regulate how the traditional communities, chiefs and others, are supposed to without assuming that chiefs always dispense justice. They do violate as well. So, with that hope, I'm not sure in terms of the finances. I got a message, so I'm just asking on the message that I had from the presenter, and that is the presenter is saying, Chair, the accrual system. I'm calling it right. That they are, you know, the message I'm getting is that. The department feels choked by the system because they are not ready, and she's still talking about next year about, you know, getting it, or how they're just advising. I'm not getting the sense, and I don't know whether this system has been introduced only this year or last year, or you know, because I'm hearing a serious outcry of how they are choking with the system. But I would have thought, Chair, that when systems are introduced, there is justification for the introduction of the system, clear objectives, and clear plans of implementation, and agreements on the kind of actions that are to be embarked upon. I would like to hear, Chair, what is it, because I'm hearing a choking voice, just like the Proteas, how they choke when they lose cricket, and you know, in cricket. So the other point, Chair, that I needed to ask on, or to raise a concern on, and I think she also mentioned this funds in trust, Chair. But my concern is the quality of work from the Guardian Fund, the Master's Office, and it's a matter that has been raised from time and again, and I must just ask it this way: what work is being done with the Master's Office? Is it staffing? Is it training? But the you know. Sometimes, Chair, they decide, they tell, I mean, the mothers or whoever is receiving funds, they decide. There's no policy of how they dispense those funds, what informs, you know, the manner in which they dispense the funds. For instance, they can decide, no, we don't want to pay school fees once, or you can only claim thrice a year or twice a year, but they still produce qualified audits on even in managing those funds, in dispensing the funds, and despite the fact that they inconvenience hugely the beneficiaries of the that I mean that has to benefit from the control of funds, the management of funds there in the Master's Office. The last one, Chair, relates to the courts themselves, just to hear the status now in relation to some of the services that are supposed to be rendered by courts in Mpumalanga, but that are still held in Pretoria. I'm made to understand that still happens, and when are we going to see that now finalized? And I think that relates to how the establishment of courts and allocation of the jurisdictions and functions and powers and whatever you do there in relation to the courts. Because you see, I'm still understanding that the people of Mbuzini in Mpumalanga, for instance, they still have to go to Pretoria, taxes and accommodation and everything else. You go there, the official is off. Official is not there, you've paid your last money and all those things. So it is a matter of concern. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. Before you respond, Advocate, I did not hear you how you responded to the question raised by Commissioner Makubela regarding the link or the working together between the prosecutor and the investigators regarding the statements. And then the second question will be linked to the one raised by Honorable Chani with regard to the vacancies. What is your plan to bring the rate from 14.5 to 0%? Well, taking into consideration the issue of resources. And you also mentioned that you outsource some of the work to consultants. What kind of work do you outsource to consultants, and if that amount of money paid to them, will it not help the the department to fill some of the vacancies by employing the people and paying them, not outsourcing the money to the consultants.
The report also on page 144 talks about the irregular and fruitless expenditure of about 60 million. And it further says that expenditure is technical. Can you elaborate how is it technical so that we have the same understanding? Thank you very much.
So we're going to share the responsibility for answering this question. So I just need to introduce the additional members, as I've indicated earlier on, that some of our colleagues will be joining us. Dion Redman is the head of the legislation branch. And next to him is Begin Bonanno, who is responsible for the strategy in the department. He manages the strategy. And then his back is Vuso Shabalala, who is the head of the human rights, I mean, we call it corporate services, and most of the issues that have been raised around the vacancies, I'll ask him just maybe if he wants to reflect on them before I can give my final comments, and then Sandra will deal together with Mr. Johnson on the financials and the audit issues. Mehmet, do you want to cover up some of the court-based issues that were raised? Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. On the issue that of the police and prosecution and investigation, I think Mr. Jenny has hinted part of that. This matter is also part of what the department is doing as part of the integrated justice system in the cluster, the JCPS, in terms of which various interventions are looked at to look at the case from the time it enters until it exits, which we call the case flow management process. In terms of that, various departments will look at various issues that hampers the process of making sure that cases are fast-tracked through the system. For instance, in the issue that you raised of police and prosecutor interaction on that, the police have, as a result of identifying that challenge, have instituted for some time a project which they call statement-taking training, where the police officers who are in the front line and are taking statements as a person walks into a client service or a police station are able to be assisted in terms of how they deal with us so that they capture the essence of the information relating to the offense that is being committed. And also, as part of the CJS review, as Mr. Jen has indicated, some of the systemic issues are looked at in terms of how prosecution and police can work together to make sure that the police, as they investigate, as they take statements, they focus on the right information. So the JCPS is looking at that and at a ground level, at a higher level, in these interventions. At another level, in each province, there are also case flow management governance structures where the magistrates, even including the judges, the prosecutors, I mean the police, the correctional services, social development, sit in one forum where they look at the issues that affect the processing of cases as part of case flow management. And as and when these issues are identified, they are put into place and activities are put in place to address them. So that center is being addressed in those forums as well as at the JCPS level in that regard. Should I move ahead to other questions that we asked? Okay. The other the issue that were raised was on the 3 hour 50 court hours that was indicated. The court hours should be looked at in a holistic manner because our courts are struggling to go beyond the 4 hour mark in terms of court sitting. So these hours are actually reflecting the actual number of hours that a court is sitting hearing cases. But if you look at it vis-a-vis the normal 8 hour, I think it's an unrealistic way of looking at it because there are other work that gets done outside the 4 hours or 3 hours 50. Magistrates must sit and consider cases and do research for judgments, or they must write the judgments, or they must read the record to make sure that before they go into court they are able to understand what has gone on in the case. There are all other in-chambers work that happens. A magistrate has to find certain orders inside the courtroom. So those hours, are also captured, unfortunately, elsewhere in what the magistrates call the MC15, which is a judicial truth, where their hours are holistically accounted for. So it does not necessarily mean that the 3 hours 50 is the only time that the magistrate walks into a court system out. There are other judicial responsibilities that they have in terms of the law and other judicial administration issues that they deal with. So in that regard, I think it will be, in my view, unfair to say a magistrate earns, let's say, 100 rand per month and divide that by 3 hours 50, because there are those issues. In the high court, when the courts are in recess, they also do judgments. They also are urgent applications that are dealt with as and when they appear before, including the chamber issues. So this information is already captured, but what we are highlighting here is the actual time that a case, a court will be sitting hearing cases on average in the system. On the issue of lost documents in the court, it's a challenge.
Just how do you then address the backlog? I understand your answer.
Okay.
The backlog.
Maybe to go back to that question, Honorable Member, through you, Chairperson. There are also other considerations that we have to look at, that there has been a considerable post-94 increase in the mandate of the court. Two, there's an increase in the number of cases that are coming into the system because the people have got more rights and we are operating in the global world, of course. Crime is going up, etc., etc. So cases are getting higher and higher. The court infrastructure itself presents its own challenges that we are looking at. So there are multifaceted areas also that has to be looked at because the infrastructure that we have that has to absorb the capacity, I mean the number of cases and the work that comes in also has to be to look at vis-a-vis. So that is why the case backlog project was put in place as part of the criminal justice review system to make sure that those cases that have been tried already for quite some time in the system are identified and fast-tracked so that they can make space in the system to make sure that cases are moving faster than they should. So as Mr. John has indicated in the backlog, in the original court, any case that is 9 months in the system, which is trial ready, is fast-tracked into the system so that it can get tried, etc. In some cases, we have to appoint more magistrates to make sure that there are additional resources to make sure that cases move faster. I don't know if Honorable Member addresses you.
I think partially you are, but the concern is that we need service delivery. And to deliver this service, indeed, is to address the very same backlog. And then we cannot justify the existence because we have multifaceted systems that we need a mechanism in to say, but how do we address the court backlogs? Because we don't want to reduce our people or to keep our people in some form of a concentration camp, you know, because we are dealing with the constitution that gives people rights. Not necessarily as a person, but as a system. What is it that indeed the department would introduce? I ask as to whether it's a legislative stress so that legislators must start something. If we get that idea, if it's a legislative problem, would be in a position to understand how do we move from here?
Okay. Issue, Chairperson. You see, some years ago you had a case of a lady that stayed in prison on a waiting trial for 5 years, for that case to just be withdrawn, precisely because of these backlog investigations. No? Now, the question we always ask is how many people are sitting in prison for 5 to 10 years only to find that there's no case around that particular person, you know? And that's how, you know, we're looking at this particular backlog. Now, how do you deal with them? I mean, Julia Machele, because that was the case popular, known, it was in the papers around us. There are new people that are coming up who are launching in prison, who are just saying, someone has been there for 5 years, 6 years, whatever, you know, which is a problem. Because you have stopped that person's life for 5 years. Nothing is moving. What is the problem? In some cases, people stay in those particular cells for more than 2 years around cases that you refer to advocate, you know, minor cases, you know. A young boy has just stolen sweets there, which was a problem. Or a poor criminal is hungry, whatever, that kid went in there, he just ate there. Which is, you know, it's a very serious offense because that kid might be learning something wrong, you know. We understand. But, you know, for him to stay behind bars for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, And at the end of the day, there's no case, there's nothing. And we are sitting with these bedrocks. How do we deal with that particular situation? Because it's a problem. You have just indicated the high percentages of bedrocks that are there to us. And our concern is that we understand the work that has to take place. We understand all those things. You know, if you compare, and any normal person outside there will not understand the issues you are raising around the multi-work that has to be done. Because when they look at the magistrate, they see that person sitting in court dealing with that. All the issues you are raising, ordinary people on the ground, because we haven't gone through a process of educating our own people. You know, what we did is we campaigned to make sure that they have access to those particular facilities, and those facilities are not assisting them, you know, which is a problem. And that's the point we are raising at this point.
Thanks, Chairperson. The comments are noted, and as I have already indicated, at a high level within the JCPS cluster, it is looking at these issues. Where issues are systemic, for instance, in the criminal justice system, as Mr. John has indicated, there are 7-point plans, which are plans of priority where issues of challenges are to be addressed in that respect. For instance, in cases where people have been sitting in cases for in jails for too long, where they are not yet tried. Part of what the CJ's review is doing is to review most of these cases. The DCS will look at an audit of how many people are sitting who are not necessarily sentenced, who are still not yet tried. And the interaction happens with the prosecution and the police to make sure that those cases are reviewed, to make sure that the case that is used as a mechanism to make sure that these cases go out. So I'm trying to say that the JCPS cluster is seized with these challenges and is putting in place mechanisms to do that. Where the law is a problem, the legislation is approved, is approached to make sure that laws are put in place. For instance, the law on forensics is one of the areas that was identified as part of the problem in the CJS review, which has been pushed through the system to address that. Issues of systems that we have the ICMS in the system, the police have other CAT systems, for instance, where they register cases. For purposes of tracking some of these cases, there should be an interaction. The systems must talk to one another. And the ICMS is looking at that to make sure that we are able to take information from the police to the court and justice to the DC Correctional Services to track this information. So I hope I'm covering in brief how the JCPS and the Integrated Justice System is addressing some of these issues, especially in the criminal justice review, as part of the case backlog.
A follow-up,
I just want to make a recommendation here, because here we're dealing with issues that must be dealt with practical, operational issues of dealing with the backlog according to the present, the current procedures that are there at that level. Maybe we need to say we need to meet the minister, because some of the answers that are given there are answers of matters of principle, legislation, so whatever. So that practically, as my colleague has said, how is our people saved? We are representing the people here. How is the people saved who are languishing in jail for 5 years without even given a chance, a bail or whatever? I would recommend that let's note what they are answering, but let's have a minister to come here, a minister itself, so that certain things we are able to politically engage. Mm-hmm. We can't engage administrators politically. We understand the procedure.
Can respond to other questions.
The issue of lost documents in the courts, a challenge which we have already identified, and we are currently in the process of doing an audit to identify those cases where they have been lost so that we can put interventions in place. Part of what we are doing is to put a central archive system, in terms of which all the cases that are recorded in our courts will go to a central data bank, where it will be easy to extract information or documents when they are needed for appeals and review from a central point. because currently we are on an outsourced basis where we have transcribers in each province who does the transcriptions. So we are faced with that challenge and we are addressing it. What is the other issue? The other issue related to the statistics in the labor as well as in the land claims court. May I, on the issue of statistics generally for determining the performance of the department, especially the court, indicate that as a response to make sure that we provide proper information, the department has developed what it is calling the National Operations Center. The National Operations Center's mandate is to ensure that the department is able to collect its information, analyze it, and be able to provide scientific management information for decision making. So the NOC, the National Operations Center, which we call the NOC, is currently put in place the tools and systems to make sure that information and statistics is collected from the court into a central point in the department. So as part of the work of the NOC, the reason why we have information from October to March is because the information before October was in such a state that we are not able to take it into the report because it's still being cleaned and analyzed because it has its own challenges. And this is a systemic problem that the NOC is responding to. And how it is responding to it is that we have developed tools in terms of which the information will be captured so that we are able to extract that information to use it properly. So that explains the reason why we did not include the information before October in terms of the labor court. The land claims court, in terms of which the speech within the cases are being dealt with, the land claims court cycle time is very long because before the case can be dealt with, there is long process of negotiations. The commission has to look at the case. The case gets referred to other forums for mediation and other processes, which at the end of the day, before the case can go before the court, it goes through long processes. So it is natural within the land claims court that cases will take long because of the protracted processes that they have. And the same comment that I've made with the labor court, we have identified the challenge of the information and we have put in place the tools to collect the information which will be able to be used for. Thank you.
Honorable Chan. Yeah, that's one confirmation. Does it then suggest, in terms of the explanation on the NOC, that the figures in this report, insofar as labor court is concerned, are misleading? They're not correct.
They are not misleading, so you Chairperson.
Are they correct?
Yes. For the period for which we have reported.
So I'm saying they are incorrect in the context of the fact that the report is an annual report. So to me as a layman, if you say it's an annual report, it means it covers the period April to March the following year. Now, those figures there cover only 4 months. Therefore, in the context of the real report, they are incorrect. You can't say they are correct. Thanks.
Can you respond to other questions that have been raised?
Is this report a report of 4 months, or is it an annual report? We should deal with the right things here. This is the highest level of parliament. We need to know whether this report is an annual report or a report of 2 months. Let's get that confirmation.
Can you respond to that, Advocate?
Yeah.
Chair. Oh, sorry. Chair, it's a report for 12 months. But I think we're also indicating challenges because, for example, in terms of our gathering of statistics, I must say the tool that she's mentioning, that tool was only developed last year, so it's not a perfect model. So I think the numbers that we're giving, they reflect those, the period for which, were collected. and so it cannot be a true reflection of the performance of it. If it's the labor court or the land claims court, it may not really, because it's only reflected. But however, I think maybe... See, part of the challenges I think that we had with this, it's a question that we didn't know how much in detail we should prepare because we would have gone, section by section just to give you
the entire, you know, kind of information that we have in terms of dealing with these particular issues and so on. So that, because for now we just summarized this and we thought with the time that has been allocated to us that we'll not be able to give you that. But I think maybe perhaps as part of the engagement with this committee, you know, except for this engagement, we also accept the responsibility that I think we should firstly provide you with all the details and the information you have in terms of the questions that have been raised, but also to engage you outside this, because that's how we dealt with the committee previously, that on the issues that you are picking up in your constituency where what you are saying here is contrary to what your experience is on. I think it's good, you know, for the department as well to engage you with it on that particular, because you are also not saying in this report that, you know, everything is perfect. We still know, as you know, in terms of the constitution, that the minister cannot interfere so much with the exercise of the judicial powers. You know, I mean, we've heard about this kind of issues, and that's a challenge that the department faces, because we cannot influence the judiciary to any kind of process in terms of for them in coming up with some kind of accountability in terms of how the courts are performing. We have suggested, I think, as he has explained, that part of the process was at the political level just to introduce a framework that would enable judicial officers to have a much better way of managing, but we cannot force them. That's one of the dilemmas that I'm just saying. And one of the proposals that we have made, I think, in the past, and which has not been followed up, was in order to ensure that there is adequate accountability in all these three organs of government, there is a need at some point in time for Parliament to engage with the leadership on the judiciary. Because I think all what we are saying here, we are giving information that the judiciary gives us, but we can't question them beyond what they ask. So I think that's the biggest question on political level that I'm just raising with you, that perhaps this is but one issue to ponder with, you know, when that opportunity dawns, so that at least you have some kind of accountability on all organs of government, you know, so that it's only, not only on two levels, legislature and executive. Because at the current moment, we don't have any framework that makes the judiciary to account in terms of how it performs its functions, except for what we have suggested at the department, which they have accepted. But I think these are issues that I think if there is that engagement with the leadership at the judiciary level, I think we could find some solutions to the current issues that have been raised. I mean, the issues you are talking about, some of them relate to attitude. We can't control that. We can just, even if there is an issue around the magistrates, that perhaps in the manner they handle their cases does not reflect what we're saying here. But there isn't anything other than to report that matter through the Magistrates Commission that we as executive we can influence. And so I'm just, maybe those are issues that we can park aside for that further engagement and perhaps to look at what needs to be done. But on the systemic issues, I think the 7-point plan tries to identify what the missing gaps are, and it tries to come up with the problem. I think we have also indicated in terms of these points, at what level are we at this stage? We have not completed the picture. And so we haven't covered most of the ground, and I think we cannot be presenting a situation here that is complete. And that's what I'm saying, that we have identified this problem, but at least there's an engagement at the operational level how we are picking up the system, just to explain.
Just a recommendation. What is the name of our committee? Security and Constitutional Development, which I think has got a mandate on what challenges we are raising, to refer to the relevant committee that will do with magistrates, whatever the case may be. I would say maybe we need to know this as a recommendation of this committee to begin to engage, because we can't leave things hanging. Who will come and address them? The fifth parliament, or the tenth parliament? I mean, if it is an issue that is a challenge to this parliament, let's refer them to relevant committees to begin that process. I think the other thing that we need to, as we come, maybe have, I don't know how many engagement we have, these systemic issues, so that we're able to also be part and make sure that we are looking at the development of those things in order to reduce these challenges that we're having.
Well, Matila. Commissioner.
No, Chair, I think we can now hear and understand the situation better. I think in future, this must be the last time that the report comes before this committee, where all other components, because see, the challenges you are raising with us makes it difficult for us to understand what is happening in either the Judicial Service Committee, the Magistrates Commission, and all that. You know, so those components that make this particular department are here, they can hear us saying these things to you. We're saying this to you. They are not here. They won't understand all these things. You know, and they don't understand our own concerns as to what is happening outside. Now, it will be important that in future, when, you know, if we just make sure that you have the management of those particular other bodies that you have within. So it's when you read the report, to us it's like it's your report. No? At the end of the day, you just receive statistics that you don't even control, you know, which is a problem. And I think we need to find a way of making sure that, because, you know, all these institutions must account to Parliament. Now, how do they account to Parliament? You can't account on their behalf, which is a problem. But you see, the problem is, Parliament gives you the money, and you then just transfer the money to them for them to implement. And you must come back and account on things that you can't account, which is the problem. And I agree with you that we need to find a way of dealing with some of these issues, and we'll have to engage politically. I was just saying, I'm just introducing this new thing, that I think it is important that when the head of the department comes, he comes with all these components. You know, that will then assist us to move forward.
Commissioner, thanks, Chair. Mine is a follow-up question which was hanging to the issue of strike of the role. The answer given was that when the case has been struck of role, when it comes back as a new case, because you can identify it that it was the previous one. Now, what influence will it have on the statistics of the movement of that court docket?
You can respond. Check and can. All right. Do you want to come in?
Yeah. Well, the influence it has on the statistics is that it has a tendency, if not identified, to inflate the statistics. So that is why I was saying that the case management system, which are electronic, are meant to make sure that such gaps are closed so that one case is not recycled and counted more than once.
I was just going to request the head of the corporate services on the personnel and resources made on the vacancies to respond to it. Then I'll ask the CFO just to deal with the audit and finance issues.
My question,
thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'll start with the question of the employee benefits, which is highlighted on the AG report as one of the basis for qualification. I just want to share the members that the issue of land management is less about the question of controlling leave and more about controlling leave through the PASAL system. If I may just explain this. Leave is controlled by the supervisor of the official. In other words, the official has to apply for leave and that in a form, a manual form, and the supervisor has to then approve the leave. If at the end of the month the supervisor at the pay point will look at the payment advice and check that the official is not being paid for leave, is not being paid for leave that was taken irregularly. What the Auditor General is highlighting to the Department and Parliament is that between the time that the application form is lodged and when it is actually captured on the PASAL system, there is
a lag. So when the Auditor General looks at the living records from the personal system at a point in time, there will have been leave that was applied for, granted, and taken, but that is not yet on the personal system. Now, this is a challenge that I think all departments will have, and obviously departments with more staff will have more than departments with less staff. It's a challenge that the personal system as it operates now does not lend itself to providing accurate records at the right time for the capturing of data at the point of the transaction. And this is a challenge that government is mindful of and is addressing through through a project or program that is managed by the DPSA, which is to develop both human resources systems and financial management system across the public service, which will enable the departments to manage these matters and the information in a much better way than is currently the case. Now, during this time, Treasury and the DPSA, for good reasons, have said that the government, the public service, must not spend money at departmental level developing systems when these systems should in fact be developed at a transversal level. So the DPSA and Treasury will therefore say that we can't, at this point in time, have a system developed by the Department of Justice which manages leave better than the federal system today manages leave. Now, part of the reason for the delay in the capturing of the forms on the federal system is that those forms must be taken from the offices. If you look at it at regional level, the forms must come from each site where the officials are to the regional office where they then get captured. Now, those forms will not be sent to the regional office on a daily basis. They will be sent a bundle on a weekly basis, depending on the size of the court, to the regional office. Now, for all of the other divisions, branches that are still managed directly from national office, as the state attorney and the masters have been, all of those forms from the different sites must be sent to head office, which will then capture them. And again, they will not be sent on a weekly basis. So at a point in time, the records on paper are not going to correspond to the real to the reality in terms of leave actually taken by the officials. Now, we have engaged with the DPSA on this, and in the last meetings that we have had, for instance, with them, where we have been saying perhaps we should look at removing modules of the HRMS, the Human Resources Management System, instead of releasing them all at once in 2011-2012. But there are obviously challenges with this with regards to the management of the contract and all of that, which is being worked through. Now, with regard to the vacancy rate, if I may, Chairperson and honorable members, there are a number of issues that we need to deal with regard to the vacancy rate. One of them is that the establishment of the department is not fixed year to year. It shifts. So as new legislative initiatives are implemented, as the department
two vacancies need to be created. Now, those vacancies that are created must be filled in terms of priority for the department. If Parliament has said that vulnerable groups is prioritized, then officials must be appointed that are going to cater for that, and the priority given to that may be higher than filling posts of security guards, if I can make an example of that. Which brings me to the other issue about some of the vacancies that we will have on the establishment. We have historical vacancies. For instance, as I've said, security officers. Now, at the point in time, the department says, we are now going to contract a service provider to provide security. But we still have security officers post on the establishment. Now, it is not going to fill those posts. Now, in terms of prescripts, those posts will then be, a process will start to abolish them over a 12-month period. But one of the challenges there is that units, head of offices, will want to convert some of those posts instead of abolishing them, to convert them to allow for, to take the budget for those posts, say if you have five security guards, security officers posts, you can convert that, take the same budget and fill in a more remunerating post so that in some cases you do not then increase the establishment, but you just utilize the existing points that are not priority for that period or that the department for strategic reasons has decided to move away from. Now, other points in our records, and I must say that we have a serious challenge with regards to the accuracy of our records for the reasons that I've explained. Now, other points may be a decision taken. Judges may say, for instance, we are not going to fill the judge's secretary's post. Now, as the members have pointed out, some of those decisions are not strictly within the control of the department. But even within the department, between the creation of a, between the presentation of a request that we need to have another 200 posts, and the time that that post is actually created, there is going to be a lag because there has to be job evaluations done, which in some cases where a transversal post is involved, it's going to have to be a transversal process coordinated at the central level with all the departments that participate at both national and provincial levels, participating in deciding what level those posts are. And during that time, those posts can be filled on a permanent basis because the level has not yet been determined. So that is one of the issues around that. So the point that I'm trying to explain to the members is that the vacancy rate issue is actually to some degree a moving target determined by the size of the establishment, the decisions on the filling of this or the other post. Now, if I may just add another dimension that creates the complexity here, is that each time you advertise, you want to fill 500 posts, say at level 7. Now, amongst your applicants will be people who are currently in the department at levels 5 and 6. So, as you fill the 500 posts, you create another 500 vacancies in the department that must then be filled. So the number of posts actually filled per year will be growing in significant numbers without in every case reducing the vacancy rate. Now, there will be strategies and plans on that the department is looking at. For instance, with regard to this change in the department, one strategy has been to say that when will advertise standard posts, but 500 people actually apply. And you will fill those 20 posts. Now, you may then say, do I, when I want to fill another 20 posts for the same level of position, re-advertise, or do I go to the existing database and extract that from that? Now, there are issues where you do not want this to be, again, then abused by officials. So, the corporate services area is going to have to exercise strict control over those types of incidents where you use applications that were done for the same level of posts, but perhaps at different parts of, say, Gauteng, in different offices in Gauteng, to fill in posts that you are now advertising at a later point in time. Now, the issue of temporary staff, again, as the DG has indicated, we will not be able to give you specific figures here. As the members will have noted, part 5 in the annual report has a string of tables that are done according to public service guidelines. Now, some of the information will not speak directly to the questions and the issues that the members are raising, and we may need to get an opportunity to then analyze the information, which is plenty of data, as the members have seen, so that we are able to answer the questions that the members are specifically posing with regard to that. Now, temporary staff, if the members look at the employment changes table, for instance, in the tables that are given in part 5, you will see that in the temporary staff category, there is a very high turnover of staff. And that is because temporary staff, whether it's interpreters and other categories, they are appointed for that specific task that has to be carried out at the time, and then they leave and others will be appointed. And again, that to some degree tests the capacity of the department to deal with these issues. The employment equity issue is one that the department is also concerned about, especially as regards to the level of the number of women or the proportion of women at senior management level, where we still fall short of the 50% target by some 6%, and the people with disabilities, where we are falling significantly short of the 2% target that is set there. Now, what I'd like to explain to the members is that the department actively seeks to fill these positions with the targeted groups. And our address makes this clear, and our appointment procedures also seek to ensure that this is happening. So when a post must be filled, the human resources practitioner that sits on every selection and interview panel is going to present to the other members of the panel from the line management the equity position in the particular office or particular unit that is being filled. And it's only when the targeted group cannot be found to fill the post that in some cases the post is then filled by somebody who is not from the targeted group. Now, then the department has to make a trade-off between service delivery because what would then happen is that where you are targeting women for a senior management position, say at director level or chief director level, and you don't get in the open process where everybody applies for the position, you do not get people who can fill that position in terms of the equity legislation, which takes into account more than just one qualification or requirement, but takes experience, potential, and other matters. If you don't then identify the official, you have a choice between re-advertising the post or saying we shall try and find in other areas where we can fill the post with the people from the designated group. With regard to the people with disabilities, we have even more serious challenges. Now, the strategy that has been proposed and the communication that goes to senior managers is that we are going to try and force to where there are no applicants into the for the position that is advertised, deliberately seek the assistance of the relevant organizations that represent these groups to assist us to identify candidates. Now, that also does not always happen. I'll make an example. I've been trying to fill a post of administrative officer at level 7 in my office. Now, after a 2-month period in trying to make sure, because we have to try and lead by example as senior managers, finally we were able to get a candidate from working with the relevant organization that can be that fits into the category of people with disabilities. Now, that was after attempting over and over, and if you appreciate it, that means that during that time when you are trying to cover that process, there is a dent in the quality of service that is actually delivered. I think Chairperson, the
I see hands. There are follow-up questions. Hello, Chani and Commissioner.
See, I'm going to appeal. You see, some of the answers given here provoke more questions. And they're not helping us because Honorable Director that side seems to want to protect or defend the weakness that we are picking up. That is not what you want. Some of the things are there, all that we are saying as Parliament is that go and correct. Otherwise, if you go and fall like this defending, we are tempted to raise a lot of questions. Let me take an example, the issue of a leaf. And I will follow this example of explaining how it moves. One thing that triggers a payment of salary is proof that I have always been at work. The point attendance registers or whatever that they call it, clocking cards or whatever, whatever means that they use, electronic or manual, but there should be something that comes from a lower level to a payment department for you to be paid that you were at work during that particular period. And when something are sent to the regional office, if I'm on leave, they will send it together with a leave form that has been approved for payment to be effected. Now, if that is not captured on the system from manual to electronic at that particular level, you cannot blame whoever at a lower level. When you begin to understand why the department has incurred irregular payments or a number of things as the auditor has done. Because the systems and controls seems to be very weak. This whole explanation tells you a lot about the HR department of the department itself. So really, instead of trying to justify why this, because once you try to justify, you are creating another problems. We beginning now, as you were speaking, I was beginning now to say, but then
one can again simply say a lot of information in this report is incorrect. And it's not me who say that, it's you saying that, unaware that you are telling us that this report is not correct. And the thing that the minister is not here, because you guys are the support structure for the minister, for him to be successful in his mandate. But then if you are giving him one report, and you pick them up at the level of parliament, it reflects back on the minister, not on yourself, in the eyes of the public. There's no need to defend, sir. Just accept whether the issue of vacancy rate, you see, I know for a fact that there is what we call internal recruitment, external recruitment to widen your net in terms of getting more experienced and skilled people. If you practice it correctly, you cannot have a situation where you fill 500 points and create another 500 points. Where other companies, be it private or public sector, manage to get it right, the vacancy rate is at acceptable standard, and then you cannot get it right because you want to justify it in your own understanding. Because I understand it this way, I will never get it right. We don't want you to leave this room with the belief that you will never get it right, because you will come next year and say, no, but I told you last year that, you see, when I do this, I think it will never be resolved. Same like the leave thing. It's not correct that those departments with more staff will always experience the problem that the auditor has picked up insofar as leaves are concerned on the personal system. There are departments that have it right, because the human resource department understand the practices and the processes to be followed. You are telling us that we are advertising, but people are not applying, we don't get the required skills, or we don't get the people with the necessary qualifications. You are not telling us that. A few that we had in one municipality in Mpumalanga, that look, we are advertising in this area, but you don't have the people who are financially skilled in the province because of historical problems. You as a minister, but you're not saying that. But you want to justify it because your systems are weak. It is very clear here. The systems in India are weak, and we need to tighten and improve on those so that you avoid some of those problems that are being solved by the auditors and all that. And if these things were not going to be, no department will be able to correct, so the Auditor General would not have raised them as part of reasons for his qualifications. He would have just noted them and passed and say, without necessarily qualifying further, but I want to highlight these things. You see, the issue relating to the third party payments, we understand. If it was the only reason for you to be qualified, we wouldn't even bother to interrogate too much on that. Because it's a problem that will always be there, and perhaps it will be resolved in the manner and fashion that you are suggesting it should be dealt with. Separate from your own financials. Separate audit for that and separate whatever. But really, these ones of HR department, and those are things that can be fixed. We don't want this excuse that we are hearing. In all fairness, I'm avoiding to ask questions here because it will be like we want to embarrass some of the officials here. But really, we understand how these things work. They are being raised, at best we are expecting to be told that the Auditor General has raised these things. This is how we intend to correct them going into the future. Without wanting to convince us, because the same information, I would suspect, in the response to the Auditor's management letter, they give the same explanation, I would suspect. And I don't know why I even accepted this particular explanation. Why would we accept such explanation? That's my appeal. We are not here to expose or interrogate, but we wanted to get clarity on the report that is, so that you don't just accept it. But our inputs and questions are aimed at assisting the department in terms of the blind spot if there are issues that they don't see. But if other issues are issues of attitude, to say, we are quite aware of this, we cannot tolerate them any further. Go and correct them.
Because we don't want to sit here again next year and listen to the same excuses. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, mine is nearly the same with the last speaker, Larry Bushan. I wonder if the HRC is aware that a lot of money, the state money, is being lost in that way, that lift money. Let's say the document is sent in order to deduct the money from the member, the unpaid leave, and that thing is so delayed until the financial year passes. It's a serious other concern. HRC, I don't want to use this word, that they should definitely shake up, you know, the money and do their work.
Louis?
Chair.
Yeah.
Chair. You know, with the latest apparently it becomes clearer to ourselves that there are serious challenges. And you know, when he started to make his input, the same challenges that the head of the department has given to us around having a number of units, you know, who cannot account properly. Because you see, when I look at this particular situation, it tells me clearly that if the Magistrates Commission takes a specific decision there to come, because you see, at the end of the day, when you budget for a year and say these are the posts, you budget money for that. You see, you can't come in the middle of the year and say, no, for this security post, I think we need to outsource this and look for other money. Because the next question we will ask you, because you just said some departments will want to convert that to something else, which is wrong. And look for other money to have security, you know, which is a problem, you know. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we have had this, but I think this department must come back with those units, you know, so that we are able to can engage those specific units properly, because we're not doing justice, you know. I mean, it is clear that there's limited information in as far as what is happening in those specific units, because they are just supplying statistics as indicated previously. And I think it is important that in a way, we just don't prolong this meeting further, no? And just ask to say, look, we have had you, we appreciate the information that we have received, but I think we need to reconvene this meeting, you know? So, you know, those units are here, you know? The issues you have raised in terms of staffing only is worrying, you know? Because those people must come and account as to what is happening with those vacant posts. What is happening to this list? What is happening to all those things? The challenges that has been raised there. Well, I don't think it is right for us to ask her while somebody else is managing the process somewhere else. You see? I think it's unfair. You know? When the AKD says, you know, judiciary is a different situation. You know? It's part of government on its own. You know? And therefore, they can't impose issues. When they see wrong things, they can't impose. They need to negotiate with them, talk to them and say, please do things differently. You know? And that's what's coming out here. And that's why I would plead to say no. I don't think it would be fair for us to blame the department. You know? We can't blame them. There are constraints that they have that are beyond them, and definitely it is important for us to make sure that people that must account must come here. You know? So that they account. We know that HOD is responsible because this is the accounting officer. In as far as this department is concerned. But there are limitations and there are constraints that he has because of the nature of the department itself. You know, it's unlike any other ordinary department, Chair. You know, any other ordinary department, because when the HOD gives instructions, it's instructions to everybody else. You know, in this instance, the situation is complicated, it's different, and therefore, my suggestion, Chair, is I think it's unfair to not engage the HOD, to engage the department fully on all these issues, so that, because people that are causing those stumbling blocks, they are not here to get come in account. And that's my view, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair. Sorry, Chair. Oh. No, Chair, let him go, because I was going to ask you to close the meeting at the end of my speaking. So and if he gives me the option to speak after him.
I give you the option to speak before me.
Oh, okay. All right. Chairperson, I think we've overstayed the
the meeting first. But I think I am also convinced, Chair, that obviously reminding ourselves that this is just a 2008-2009 work that was done, and I think it's fair for us to say, Chair, that we think that we've got the details that they prepared, and it provoked a lot of questions and Chair, perhaps I'm not sure. I was also listening, attentively, and it sounded like a work study presented to us about the issues of this, but it was not answering to the question, what is going to happen? In fact, your question, Chair, what's going to happen to the 14.5%? We haven't had that. But it's fine, Chair. I think I go along with the suggestion that says, and I think Mr. Jan has indicated right from the beginning, I think he had a sense of this. He was suggesting even to engage yourself in outside this meeting on a number of things. I think he has agreed to that one, Chair. And then secondly, Chair, I don't want us to go out whilst I agree with my comrade on this issue of who accounts and bring the other people, perhaps if the opportunity is there. But we have a very crowded program, and it might not be this. We are by no means, Chair, saying that they will not come into this format again and report. I would still expect them to have more details and not statistical information from the Magistrate Commission, because the ultimate responsibility lies with the department. And in therefore, Chair, whilst there is an information from the Magistrate Commission, from the judiciary, but I don't expect perhaps who's chairing the Magistrate Commission to come here, or the CEO, or whoever, if there's a CEO or an administrator, to come and do here. But they can be, if the staff of the Magistrate Commission be there with them to provide more details, if that's possible. But I'm still expecting the department to be on top of issues, Chair, and performing at their best in giving us the information and answers as we speak here, and to help, because they are also here to guide us, Chair, to advise us on matters that we need to facilitate decisions and legislation and policy, and they also have to come here and cry if they are bottlenecks that they are facing. So I'm saying, Chair, I hope the message that we are saying to them is simply saying that we by no means expect that the poor magistrate would come and talk about the steps that his clerk has given to the department. We do expect the department to have every detail, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm just writing to concur with you, my leader, and I concur, and to also concur with Mr. Chian as a forecaster. He prophesies this conclusion. I know this committee would have wrong again if things were straightforward. We usually doesn't go beyond an hour, but I think there are a lot of issues that were provoking further follow-up, presentation of issues. I would concur that we have heard what we have heard, we have noted what we have noted. Indeed, it would suggest that the department should go back and with what is progressive, would say we've noted, but on all those issues that really need detailed answers, we would have to have time. We might not suggest time now. The engagement between our committee's staff and them would indicate as to when we can come and get some of those answers. Because really, the way in which HR was responding, you would even see the weakness of a HR strategy, if there is any. And therefore, we would need to engage much more, in much more robust way. I would suggest indeed to say we need to adjourn. We need to adjourn and let the department go and do work. The department really account constitutionally to parliamentary committees. Whether magistrate manager is here or not, it's them that must bring this answer, or they would know how to coordinate who is supposed to be giving answers to certain issues. I would really concur. The reason is that I've never seen this committee go beyond 1 hour. Really.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we agree that we have to adjourn. On the note that issues that have been raised have been noted, and this is that we need a further engagement, as you have correctly said, Advocate Jan. Formally and informally, and those details will be dealt with and communicated to you by the secretary of the committee, and we also go on our oversight work. We were in the Northern Cape last month. Next week, the Committee on Cooperative Governance will be going to Gauteng. But there is an issue that we have to attend to in one of the magistrates' courts in Pretoria. And we will communicate with you as and when we receive the issues that need us to interact. And but this was a very, very informative engagement, and we hope that those issues that have been raised will honestly go and deal with them, so that the next time we meet, we get a clear sense of how we are going to deal with some of them. And also wish you all the best in your work as an acting HOD. Once again, thanks very much with your team. You are released. Unless there's anything that you want to say to the committee before you are released.
No, Chair, I think also on our part, also on behalf of the delegation here, just to this is my first engagement, by the way. This is my second day in office, so I'm looking forward to this continuous engagement, because it will really help us to improve the current scenario. And it also help us so that one day we can, you know, the very times one of the efforts that we've taken. So I think the issues for me that you have raised are fundamental, and I think they also indicate what is it that we need to do to reshape the department so that we are in keeping with the expectations and so on. So it's a journey that all of us work to, you know, share, and I take that in that responsibility, and I think we also don't take some of the issues personally that have been raised. We know this has been done professionally in order to build us, I think, as a department, and we take it in that constructive spirit. So, in fact, I think we will do and we'll make sure that I think we have tackled all of these issues that have been raised, and I think some of them will kind of skip the responsibility. It is our responsibility to perfect them, and we can't delegate to other, you know, institutions and so on. So, but thank you again, Chair, for having, you know, engaged us on these issues. And we promise that I think perhaps when we engage for the second time, on the time that will be set aside, we'll have much coherent, you know, presentation that talks to the issues that have been raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Louis?
Yeah, I know, Chair, I was just checking if we are helping Juliet and Inovo to raise their incomes, and because I only got water, Chair. So well, we didn't anticipate beyond an hour. So it is 2 o'clock. Maybe the food is cold somewhere, or it's lost or something.
No, this is a change, but there are still issues that we have to deal with. We will review the department and continue with the agenda.